Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Oh, we just loved it. It was hard to do, but when you got it, you got it. There was a right and wrong. See, in history, there was no right and wrong. There was a visible objective in mathematics. And you knew when you got there.
That's Catherine Goble Johnson. She is 98 years old. She's reflecting on how her love of mathematics led her to a remarkable career, remarkable especially for a black woman of her era. Catherine Goble Johnson worked for NASA, making critical calculations that helped American astronauts return safely from the moon and space. She was helping the U.S. advance in the space race, even as the advance of civil rights was still being fought for at home. And she wasn't alone in all of this. She was a member of a group of black women in NASA known as the West Area Computers. Author Margot Lee Shetterly has set out to shed more light on their contributions. She's written a book called Hidden Figures, and she joins us from Charlottesville, Virginia. Hello.
Hi, Anna Maria. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we start, I just want to make one thing clear. When we talk about computers in West Area Computers, we're not talking about machines, are we?
We are not talking about machines. It's easy for us to think that in this day and age, when a computer is ubiquitous on our desktops and in our phones and even our toasters, that a computer always has been an appliance, when in fact a computer was a job category, meaning somebody who computed, somebody whose profession was to do calculations, a professional mathematician. For many years, this person was usually a woman.
What types of work, then, were the human computers doing?
In the particular case of the Langley Memorial Aeronautical Laboratory in Hampton, Virginia, what they were working on is aeronautical research, helping planes fly faster, higher, more efficiently, and safer. A lot of the work that's done today by electronic computers, long calculations, you know, everything from simple but necessary arithmetic to differential equations, calculus, higher order math, that was done by women. This group of black women who came in and were working as computers were actually part of a larger group of black and white women.
And we heard Catherine Johnson off the top there. Despite being in a lower position as a mathematician than the engineers, she played a key role in America's race to space. In fact, there was a special request for her from John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth. What's the story there?
In early 1960s, Project Mercury was in full boom. This was America's first manned space program. Two successful missions had happened, Alan Shepard and then Gus Grissom. These were suborbital flights. So basically, the capsule kind of goes into space, something like, imagine a champagne cork being popped and then just, you know, following a parabola and falling back to the Earth. Well, John Glenn's flight was going to be a real groundbreaking mission because he was leaving the Earth's atmosphere, orbiting around the Earth, and coming back safely. This was a really interesting moment in space history because it was also a time when computers, electronic computers, not the female computers, were starting to take over from their human counterparts. You know, you can imagine going into space is a risky endeavor, and there's so many things to check. And one of the things to do was to understand that the computer was functioning properly. So John Glenn asked Katherine Johnson to basically check the computer output. Let's make sure that these numbers are correct. Get the girl to do it. It's what he said. The girl being Katherine Johnson, and girl being the name for basically all of the human computers at that time. They were called girls.
Of course they were.
Get the girl to do it.
Yeah.
You know, these were the 1940s and 50s and 60s. Times have changed significantly. But get the girl to do it. If her calculations match those of the computers, well, then, you know, I'm satisfied and, you know, I'm ready to go into space.
That is a great story. So you make the point that women were doing this job and that there were white women and black women. They were actually segregated under the original system of the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, the NACA.
Yes, this was in Virginia starting in the 1940s when the Jim Crow segregation laws were still very much in effect.
And so how did black women start getting those jobs?
It wasn't until World War II, you know, a time of all hands on deck labor. And in 1941, a labor leader named A. Philip Randolph essentially pressured President Roosevelt to open the federal government jobs, the civil service, defense industry jobs to African Americans. 2 years after an executive order signed by Roosevelt, five black women walked through the door at the Langley Memorial Laboratory.
There were black men working there in a professional capacity at the time as well?
There were not, actually. So the first black professionals to work at what became NASA were actually women. There were black men working there as groundskeepers, as mechanics, as janitors, all of that kind of thing. That is true. But it wasn't until the 1950s that the first black male engineers started taking jobs at Langley. So really, when we think about the first black Americans in the space program, we're talking about women.
Now, there was segregation at the time. What was it like for those women at work?
Because of Virginia laws, which required segregation, they worked in their own office, they had colored bathrooms, and they had a colored section in the cafeteria.
It actually said that on the little label on the table, didn't it?
There was actually a sign that said colored computers in the cafeteria, and that was where they were required to sit during lunch.
You actually tell the story of one of the women who asked somebody else where the washrooms were.
Yes. Now, this was in the 1950s. One of the women that I profile in my book is named Mary Jackson. And Mary Jackson has the distinction of being the first black woman to be an engineer at NASA. She was promoted in 1958 to become a full aeronautical engineer. And it happened that one day she was working with a group of white computers and she asked them, well, can you tell me where the bathroom is? And they kind of snickered because, you know, well, they said, well, we don't know where your bathroom is, meaning the colored bathroom. And you can imagine this was a real moment where this woman, Mary Jackson, well-educated professional doing very well in her job, was confronted with the ugly realities of Jim Crow segregation there in this very professional workplace. So, you know, it took a lot. I mean, this, I think a lot of times we think about the courage that it takes to protest and to make changes. There's so many different ways to do that. And I think to go into a workplace like that every day, a segregated workplace, and to still do absolutely top-notch professional work, it really takes a lot of guts. And I think that, you know, the everyday courage of these women definitely created opportunities for women of all colors and for African-American men.
And why was a job there worth putting up with that kind of treatment?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of jobs required, you know, confronting that kind of treatment. You know, I mean, for
it's
most
It's not like you could escape it at that time, is it?
You couldn't escape it. This was a part of everyday life. Many black women worked in laundries. They worked in white people's homes. They did a lot of very difficult, dirty, often, you know, underpaid, underappreciated work. having a job like this, a professional mathematician, for most of these women, you know, and for women in general, not just Black women, but for all women who were talented mathematicians who had studied math in school, the primary option was to become a math teacher. And so having a job as professional mathematician and in one of the highest level scientific organizations in the world, well, I mean, you know, that truly was a door opening on an entirely new way of living and working. I mean, this was a huge opportunity for these women. And, you know, they were determined to do anything they could to keep those jobs.
A few years later, Mary Jackson has a confrontation with a white male boss, John Becker, who tells her that some calculations she has done are incorrect. What happens then?
Mary Jackson's division chief, John Becker, had given her a set of numbers to compute. She did the work and she got the results. And he questioned the numbers. They just didn't look right to him. So they went back and forth over the numbers. And it turned out that he had actually given her the wrong data as input. So her output was correct based on the input that he had given her. To his credit, he apologized to her. And needless to say, Mary Jackson enjoyed an increase in status among all the female computers for, you know, basically facing down the big, big boss, you know, and someone who's very, very well known in the aeronautical research world and sticking to her guns, you know, an African-American woman in the still segregated South. And yet, you know, she had the soul of an engineer. That's one of the things that her immediate boss recognized about her and really supported her in terms of getting into an engineering training program.
Margot Lee Shetterly, stay with us. We have someone else with us who has firsthand experience working at NASA. Christine Darden is African-American. She joined NASA in 1967. She worked primarily as a researcher and project manager, mostly in the field of sonic boom minimization. She is now retired. She's with us from Norfolk, Virginia. Hello.
Hello. How are you today?
Well, I'm well. It's good to talk to you. Does listening to this bring back memories?
It absolutely does. And I've actually learned a lot since Margot did her research and wrote her book.
Because you were the next generation to come in.
I was much later than most of those ladies, yes.
Well, we were just talking about John Becker, the boss. You also had an encounter with Mr. Becker. What issue did you bring up with him?
Well, I brought up the issue of a female coming in with a certain background. And when I went there, I had a master's degree in applied mathematics, being put into the computer pool, which tended to be fairly dead end as far as job progression, rather than in an engineering section where men with identical backgrounds were put and they began to work on their own projects and write reports and move ahead. And it turned out that a young Black mathematician and I had been hired at the same time, and he had come in at a lower grade than I had and had been promoted twice, and I had not been promoted at all. I was doing pretty much work for someone else, and I think my name only went on one report while I was in the computer office, you know, sort of in a support role. I was second or third author. And so when I found that out, I really, you know, became dissatisfied and got enough energy to go approach Mr. Becker and ask, because I had actually said things to some of the other bosses, and they told me, you know, I couldn't move out, I couldn't do this. And he was supportive. I actually got a pretty fast promotion after my visit with him, too. Mm.
Now, you also began studying for a doctorate in mechanical engineering while you were working there. What do you remember most about that?
I didn't really know much when I went to Langley about what engineers did. And as they came into the office and I saw what they were working on, you know, I said, gosh, I ought to be able to do this. I had a physics minor. So I did start taking classes. One of the frightening things about it was that I knew I would be in school with primarily all white males. That was frightening for me because I had grown up, all of my education had been in a segregated environment. As I was growing up, we always heard we were going to have to run really fast, faster than everybody else. We always heard that I guess white men were smarter than we were. That was sort of the attitude that was in the community. And so the idea of going into a class with them was sort of frightening, but I said, I'm going to do it. And sure enough, when I went into my first class, there were about 7 white males and me. And I don't think anybody really spoke to me.
What year was that?
That would have been probably been about 1973 or 73 or 4. Yeah. And so after the first test, I had done very well. And I guess we could see each other's papers sometimes. And so so a couple of the guys in the class came over and said, hey, you know, we were wondering if you'd be interested in joining our study group. And so I said, sure, you know, that would be great. And that sort of melted the relationship between me and the people in the class. And most of the folks, you know, I could talk with and we could discuss issues. Maybe one or two I never had much interaction with, but I very much felt a part of the class after that.
Wow. You should see me smiling as you tell that story.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, October 13th, 2016. So I have been told. This is our weekly forum on workplace racism. Feel free to dial in. This is for folks who have problems, whether it's something that's happening to you specifically, if you have observations about other things that are happening in your work environment. Certainly, anyone who has figured out strategies, techniques that work, minimizing problems with other non-white coworkers, other white coworkers, neutralizing racist activity on the job, you should be one of the first folks to dial in. If you have figured out some things that work, we certainly could use constructive information to help us improve our situation on the job. I think that probably most folks here would sign up for that. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I will again stress this particular program. This is not a spectator broadcast. This is not, you know, a program for you to snuggle up, have some grapes or whatever your other favorite snack item, get your comfortable spot and tune in and listen to other black people talk about their trials, tribulations, or strategies that have worked to help get them, keep them from having troubles on the job. This is about sharing. I will state again, we have younger listeners, folks who do not have like a lengthy work history, so it's very helpful for them just to kind of get an idea of the types of things that they unfortunately might have to deal with, so they can already be thinking of strategies, what they will say, what they will do if they have to deal with any of these type situations. I think it's also very important just seeing the similarity with regards to the ways that racists, individuals classified as white, the ways that they target us on the job, just seeing how similar it is across region, across age group. It's the same types of things. So I think there's a strong value to that as well. And just, you know, even if you're reflecting over your total work experience, right? Looking back when maybe you were a bit more confused about racism, the understanding that you have now, looking at situations, what you did then, what you would do now, I think that can be very helpful as well, even from a personal standpoint, just having some reflection as we all continue learning. As I've stated consistently for this program, really any program, but particularly for this broadcast, if you are unable to participate live, you can email your situation, scenario, observation, whatever your comments are, you can email them to me and I'll share on the program. We can certainly keep an anonymous email address, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. If you send it to that account, I'll keep an eye out as we progress through the broadcast, and I will read as we go. We had quite a few folks who wrote in since last week's workplace racism, so I will share some of these at the beginning. If I can't get them all in at the beginning, then I'll just sprinkle the rest in as we proceed. First one. I was listening to the previous workplace racism segment, and there was a black male teacher that mentioned not smiling enough in regards to applying for a job. This happened to me during a job interview with a school. I thought everything went great, and they even mentioned how impeccable my resume was. However, I did not receive a call back. I emailed them to ask what I could have done better. The supervisor that conducted the interview said, "You know, it's real difficult to say. Interviews are difficult. We don't always get these things right. There was just one thing, though. You didn't smile enough during the interview. You were a little too serious, and we didn't really get a feel of your personality. I took note of this, and during my next interview with another job, I smiled excessively. Needless to say, I got hired. My supervisor said, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to hire you was because of that smile. You have a great smile. Lesson learned. They don't care what we bring to the table in regards to teaching and education, just as long as we are not threatening and we don't scare the white female teachers." Someone said something about white female teachers being at the center of a lot of our problems with the racist educational system in the U.S., but proceeding. I think that's in The Spook Who Sat by the Door, second to last session tomorrow, where he talks also about black people being able to manipulate and get where they want to. Just keep smiling. Just keep smiling. Okay, next letter. Let's see. Okay, next one. Academic degrees insulting non-white people from racist man, racist woman, racist child. I have 4 degrees in both law and religion, plus 2 certificates in financial planning. In my humble opinion, degrees only expose us to the inner bowels of racism, white supremacy, and makes us just that much more unstable than a lot of non-white people because we have been told that academia is a way to overcome discrimination. But when we see the machinations of white folks' supremacist structure and realize that the field of academics ultimately is not the path to get free, something in our brains click. Either we succumb in servitude to racism, scholars, teachers, researchers, professors, or other academics, or we lose mental control and emotionally try to feel out ways to regain control or not and stay in a state of mental paralysis. Many people of my era grew up in segregation with black doctors, teachers, grocers, etc., and are finding the anomaly of racism to be quite disturbing. As Lord stated, and I found it true, we cannot dismantle master's house with master's tools. I went into law to escape racism, white supremacy, white people in my financial services job. I went deeply into African-American religion to escape racism, white people in the courts and arena of law, where enforcement of written and unwritten white supremacy rules are extremely palpable, but I kept my law license. And I left the field of religion to escape those African-Americans in denominational name only, who sanctifiedly support racism in order to keep the appearance of independence. I tried to escape, I guess, to seek the comfort I felt as a youngster in the socialization of being exclusively around our own. As I may have told you before, I thought and sold Mr. Fuller's book 3 times before I achieved the aha moment. We'll conclude there, just kind of some of their observations over there. Time working and how a lot of us, I think, end up being fooled, thinking if we get the proper certification or obtain the correct degrees that racists will do right by us. And frequently, generally, always, that is not the case. Next report. This is actually about the commute, and I've touched on this before. I think Roz and some of our other callers have talked about things that they have to encounter on their commute to work. I was able to check out the archived program with Natasha Marin, which was informative. The portion addressing white people's shameless mooching was something that made me think of my commute home. White panhandlers occupy the prime real estate along the high-end Fifth Avenue in New York City from at least 47th Street to 34th Street. They post up alongside bank, pharmacy, and fast food entrances, among others. Just yesterday, I was in Duane Reade to pick up something for my wife when a white female approached me in the candy aisle. I had my earbuds in, but without the sound, so she began to hover around me and speak in a cutesy tone to get my attention. She says, "Excuse me, Mr. Handsome Black Man, I work at this bistro next. Can you hear me?" I was trying to ignore her a bit, but then I pulled my left earbud out, and she then says with a weird smile, "Oh, nice wedding ring. I'm from the bistro next door. Do you have $3 so I can get some candy because my blood sugar is low?" I stared at her for a second or two and calmly told her I don't carry cash and watched her change from a floating fairy to a grumpy ogre as she stomped away from me grumbling. Ugh, nobody does. She then spots an older non-white woman and began to ask her for more money, but to no avail. I noticed she didn't bother to ask any of the white people who were in the store, and she soon exited. I believe if you add up enough of those small requests that white people ask of non-white people constantly, you would have a million sites like reparations.me. I agree. Last one, I think I can get this one in too. Oh, this is our young caller. I will share this. This is his thoughts on The Birth of a Nation, the Parker's Project. But that's not quite workplace racism, but I'll share that as well. Okay, folks that have commentary that they would like to share, if you have observations or thoughts on what any of the folks who wrote in, feel free to comment on that. If you have your own situation, that is certainly fine as well. The number again, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Copy, sir.
Yes, sir.
Gus, good evening. Good evening to all the folks. Then I used to write you all the time about those white people begging that same area. They got a whole bunch of schemes. The first person that wrote in, I would love to speak to that person because I would love to know what is a degree in religion. How do you get that? And how are you going to escape racism working at a law firm or working in the field of law? I mean, that's so old. I was called a hooligan today at work. I thought it was very interesting. I couldn't really respond because the person who was eavesdropping walked away. But I was talking to my coworker. He was actually talking to me about seeing Birth of a Nation. So I, said, "How was it?" So he discussed it with me. And then this white lady came and asked a question. So we got out of that conversation and decided that we were just going to talk about, whatever, because she was standing there. So I said, I told her last time I went to the movies, I went to see The Purge, whatever, and da-da-da-da, and I was shocked at how expensive, just making small talk. So, she walked away, and the conversation that we was having, at this point, we're trying to fix the copy machine. We're trying to unjam it. It's a huge copy machine with different compartments that do different things, and the paper was all through it, in different places, and we had to unjam it so it could work again. And I told him, you know, when I was young, you know, we used to sneak in the movies, you know, when I was growing up, you know, never had to pay for the movie. So then he went into the conversation about how he used to do it in Brooklyn when he grew up. And the white lady must have came back, and we were on the floor, you know, trying to jam the machine. And she says, "Oh, my gosh, you guys are hooligans," and walked away. I said, "Hey, this my mom." And he said, "Oh, don't you start." You know, I was like, "I can't go out and look for her now, you know, but I wish she would have stayed there. I would have asked her, what's a hooligan?" I would have got into a conversation, but that kind of, you know, threw me off today. Also, another problem I've been having at work, and this is a classic case of racism, the person who didn't want to properly train me, she takes advantage of her break situation, and I cover her break. So her break, she is a 2-15 minutes and an hour break. So she wants me to, you know, I already told her she wants to dictate the time I'm supposed to cover her. She didn't do that with the guy who was there before me. But, you know, so I appeased that because, you know, who am I going to go and say something to? I'm a pimp. So what I notice she does is that she takes her 15 in the morning, and she doesn't take her 15 in the afternoon. What she does is she takes her lunch, an hour and 15-minute lunch, and that's okay with the boss. So, okay, that's what she does every day. But what she really does is she goes and she gets her food and stuff, and she goes and prepares it, right, while I'm sitting there. So that takes about a good 15 minutes. She goes to the bathroom and does all that stuff. Then she comes back and grabs her book and stuff, and I'm going to lunch. So now I've already been there 15 minutes, and she's going to take an hour, 15-minute lunch. So I'm covering her for an hour and a half. It takes away from my work, and this is the busy season in insurance, you know, making the booklets and things that's going out to the clients who offer insurance to the employees or whatever. So what she did last week, she got in trouble because I noticed now the guy I work with, he usually leaves at 4:30. I stay till 5:30. The boss usually leaves at 5. At 5, as soon as the boss goes, she gets up and leaves the desk. And, you know, I don't know where she is, you know, but I just noticed this several times as I'm walking around the office doing my job that she's not there. And last week, the owner of the company called, and she wasn't at the desk. And she comes in the next day, and she got in trouble. So she tries to position the conversation like, "Oh, man, we're in trouble." And I said, "Well, what happened? You know, did I direct someone to the wrong place?" "Oh, no. What happened was yesterday I took a break at 5 to go to the bathroom because I couldn't hold it. And, the owner called, and nobody was there to answer the phone. So he had to call the boss. And, you know, either way, they called me in the office today. And, you know, so now we can't leave the desk." I said, "Well, I don't never leave the desk, so I don't." So she says, "Well, now, from now on at 5, what I want you to do is come and cover me so I can take a 15 and go in the bathroom and do what I have to do." So now I'm covering her another 15. So this is an hour and a half plus 2:15. So this is 2 hours of break she's getting, you know, during the day, which I think is ridiculous. But it's no one to complain to because I don't want to be the complainer, being that I'm a pimp. And, you know, it's, you know, so it kind of really pissed me off because the guy who I work with, "Man, she's taking advantage of you." I would say, but he's been there, you know, I can't just say something, you know. The last thing I wanted to say is I got a call today from the other job I've been trying to get, and they want me to start Monday. The problem is that they want me to start, it's a night job working at the hospital overnight, and my plan was to keep both jobs. But they need me to train for the first 2 weeks during the day. So I'm going to have to go in tomorrow and tell them that, hey, you know, this is pretty much going to be my last, you know, day, or, you know, cannot come back in 2 weeks. So I called the lady in the hospital back, and I explained my situation. Spanish, a Latino lady, you know, a black lady who don't know she's black, speaks Spanish pretty much. And she kind of understood. She said, "Well, listen, I need you to at least train Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays for the next 2 weeks. And Thursday, Friday, you can work your night shift, and that way you can at least be able to go there Thursday and Friday, see if that'll work for them. So that's the way I'm going to have to try to position it tomorrow, and hopefully it works for me. If anyone had any advice on how I can word things or work it, I would be very pleased. And thank you very much for taking my call, though.
Okay, I have something. So I just have some advice for non-white people. I have, in my opinion, I've kind of been working with this theory for a while, and I've seen it work well for some people. But what you can do is, if you try to get jobs that are online where you don't have somebody staring at you and then wanting to practice racism on you because of the color of your skin, obviously, that tends to help. So, like, for instance, there are people who sell things on eBay or Amazon and make a lot of money, and people don't know who they're buying things from. So they're probably going to treat your products as if they were from a middle-aged white man, with just, you know, Amazon being in between. And then there are companies who do things like social media evaluation, and it's a decent pay rate. You can make like 15 an hour, 17 an hour. And I know black people who have been doing this for years. They do it from home. Nobody ever sees them. And like Lionbridge is one company if you want to look that up. Basically, how well you do is just based on your ability to do the work, like scores that you get. So all they really care about is how well you can do the work, and that's just put up against everybody, and it makes it really objective because there's like a number that you could get for like an accuracy score for how your work is going all the time. As long as your scores are good, you know, you really are not going to be singled out. And there's a lot of different things like that, like people who do, like the proof reading, well, no, copywriting now online. Just a lot of jobs where you can be anonymous will help you to kind of compensate for the system in place. And then I have a question that I was debating whether I was going to speak on or not, but if anybody following up wanted to call in and give me advice on this situation, I feel like I'm having a teacher practice racism against me in a school situation, which I feel like is kind of related to work, you know, because it's going to affect my career and everything. But basically, in order to pass this class, I had to get a 75 on this test, and I got a 70. And this woman made me repeat it, and I feel like if I was a white person, she would have just been like, okay. So already that's, like, insane to me that I'm having to repeat this whole class for 5 points on a test. And now that I'm repeating the class, she basically doesn't communicate with me at all. She doesn't post quizzes or tests, even though we have, like, a contract in the form of a syllabus where it's like every week you get a quiz, every month you get a test. Like, she posts no quizzes, no tests. Halfway with that, I'm just like, look, let me just take my test I need to pass over again, and then I'll be happy. But I'm worried that she might be using this, that she could twist this against me in the end, like, you didn't take any quizzes. And I'll be like, you didn't post any quizzes, because I go to school online. So, but in this case, they know I'm black, because when you take your test, the camera on your computer records you. Like, she doesn't respond to emails, things like that. And they have done studies that show, like, you know, they will respond to a white male fast. And, like, if you're, like, black or female, they take their time responding to you. It takes her forever to respond to me. So if anybody has any, like, advice about that, like, how I can just get through this, if they just want to, like, speak on that, then that would be helpful. And that's all that I have.
I was thinking about Thomas's situation first. I guess one thing I was going to say with Thomas's situation with the breaks, is that something like in the manual, does it specify like how long employees get for their break or their 15 minute or whatever? It's like, is that stuff in the manual?
Well, I don't have a manual with the company. I'm a temp. I have my own manual with my company. you know, so I have no access to this company's manual. I mean, I still got to register for a paper card to get in the building in the morning. So I'm not an employee of the insurance firm, so therefore I'm not, you know, able to see their personal documentation. I'm sure I could probably ask the coworker for it or whatever, but he's been there 20 years. I doubt he still has it, you know. So, yeah, I don't know their policy.
Okay.
So what I was told was I would cover her for 15 minutes in the morning and an hour and 15 lunch. That was what I was told.
Okay. The person that told you that, if I'm independent, if you, you know, want to address this at all, you could just ask them if this person is taking longer than the 15 and then the hour, whatever it is for lunch, this person is taking two. Should I just cover, you know, if he's taking longer than what you originally told me, just cover whatever she's going to take, or is this something that should be addressed and see what they say?
I had a question for Thomas. Just based on the female taking this extra time, it seems like she does this on a regular basis, so I guess she has this built out into her schedule in her mind. I wonder, do you think that she does drugs? Just simply because, you know, drug addicts have to have their drugs at a certain time so that they don't go through withdrawal or whatever the case may be.
You know, she acts high, but she just, you know, she's not the most intelligent white person. However, she's smart enough to know she's white, so that makes her a lot smarter than me. But she's not the most intelligent white person. She's very all over the place, very ditzy. And I don't think it's so much of a situation. I think she just wants to get over it and have an extra time to read her little books and do her little makeup. And, you know, she's an older white woman as well.
Okay, thanks.
That is your white moocher again. That came up before about blacks allegedly being the moochers and we just want welfare. The female caller in Georgia, I think that's great suggestions. I think we were having that conversation before about finding employment opportunities where maybe you can drastically minimize or totally eliminate having direct contact with whites. If there are like sites that you would recommend that have maybe some listings of those type opportunities, that might be helpful, at least something kind of people can have on the side. Just in case, you know, if things get bad or get tight, that can be an option folks can explore. I don't know if you know any sites you would recommend people checking out.
Yeah, another one that's really good, and they hire year-round, but, well, it's appen.com, appen.com. So they're basically always hiring, but sometimes they're not hiring. But if you just put in an application, for instance, when I was hired, there was a delay of a few months to where I thought, like, they had forgotten about me. But they're just, you know, when they have another project come up. And it's excellent. Like, I've seen black people who have social anxiety and can't deal with authority do very well for many years with these jobs. And they just pay you direct deposit. You work whatever time you want to during the day. I think it's great. So appen.com is one. Another one is Lionbridge, which is like Lionbridge. I don't know if that's just .com, but that's the company, and you would be able to find that online. And basically the typical way that you would find out about the jobs, like try to find like a tab on the main page that says something like careers or work with us or job opportunities. It should be pretty straightforward once you get to the website, like how to go through the application process. And there's a lot of different online type things, and I think that will increase. And so I think, like, I feel really positive and hopeful about that's like going to be really great for us. And even I think people might sleep on eBay and Amazon. There are groups that you can join on eBay and Amazon and see where people are making six figures a year, $70,000. You know, it's really however much you want to invest. And it's close to entrepreneurship because you do have to, like, purchase the product. But, I mean, Amazon has like rules, and these people discuss like strategies for things, and they open up different like markets and avenues all the time. Like they just started selling food. You could do that and get really into that and be even more independent and not have any cap on your income. And this is another thing that you can do anonymously and so not have to deal with the racism. It's a very endless list. There are also books that just list online work. I think a lot of people shy away from it and think that a lot of this is not legitimate and it's scams. Of course, definitely be aware that there probably are some fake things. There have been, I remember when I was little, there used to be these work-at-home things like envelope stuffing, and you gave them $50 and then you never got paid, and it was weird. But there's like real jobs and real companies, and a lot of legitimate companies are doing remote hiring now too. So you can get books online that just list like hundreds of places that hire for work online, and I think it's great. It's more healthy too. No commuting, no eating crazy fast food in the middle of the day, just being at home. It's more balanced life, work-life balance. So.
Spectacular, spectacular. Appreciate that. If folks have any other commentary on that, feel free also. I know we have listeners who are definitely interested in that sort of thing. Anybody else that we haven't heard from, if you had commentary, questions, or your own situation you wanted to share?
Madam,
oh, go ahead, lady.
Oh, just real quick. Hello to you, Gus, the host, and to the callers and listeners. Just a comment to Thomas from New York, because he said he's a temp employee. I'm a temp too. So what I would suggest, Thomas, is that you address that through your agency. You have a manager at your temp agency. You need to talk to them and explain to them what's going on, and they would get in touch with her boss, and that. Let her boss know what she's doing, mooching, like you said, because it's like you said, you know, you're literally relieving her for 2 hours while she, you know, she's taking full advantage of you, you know, so while she's taking an hour and 15-minute lunch and then, you know, at 5 o'clock, you know, 5 o'clock she messes up and then comes back and tell you, oh, my God, we're in trouble. Like, no, I'm not in trouble. You are in trouble. But my suggestion would be address it through your temp agency because your manager, I mean, in a sense, she's abusing you. And that agency is not sending you there, you know, to be abused by, you know, who you're working for. So, I mean, she's just way out of bounds. So I would just suggest that you talk to your manager at your agency and let them handle it with her boss. And I'll mute myself.
Yeah, I spoke to that lady once. And she hired me, and that was the last time I seen her. My check is up in my account, so I don't ever have a problem. You know what I did? What I did do, though, was last week when this all really started, I put on my time sheet for this week that extra half an hour. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah, because your agency, I put an extra
half an hour because what I've done is, it, being that it throws me off that last 15 minutes when I'm supposed to be doing stuff, it kind of throws me off, so it takes me longer to finish, which I don't have a problem. So, hey, now you got to pay me an extra half an hour because it's gonna, in order for me to have everything you want done for the morning, it took me an extra half an hour to sit there. So I'm just waiting for them to come to me like, how come on your timesheet? You, because that's the way I feel like I can address it without snitching or causing a problem with this lady who, even though she's not the brightest crayon in the box, she has a lot of power, and she can screw me over if she wants to, you know. So I just really don't want to, you know, snitch on her and make me her enemy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get that. So, well, like you say, you are adding that extra half hour because, believe you me, eventually they will ask you what's going on that you're doing that. So that you know, that's the best way, you know, for you to handle it. Because I get it, you know what I'm saying, about the snitching, especially because you work with her and you know what she can do, what she's capable of doing. But I, you know, my thing is just that if, because I do, like you say, you're at the companies, it really is a concern about you. They pay the agency for you to be there. But, you know, if you mess up, then you out the door. But so if that's the best way that you feel to handle it, I definitely can understand that.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Tapello.
Okay. I would make a complaint with both entities, the one that you're going through to get to that job, and the manager or the liaison that brought you in. I would go to them also and say, like Gus suggested, is this supposed to happen, or how does the break supposed to work? Because they're the people on site that can give you what their policy is right on site. Because you're being leased in to work, and you're working under their policy. So I would make complaints with both sites. The one that you went through, the temp agency that you went through, I'd make a complaint with them, and I'd make a complaint with the person, with your immediate manager that's managing you on the site. I'll unmute my line.
Other folks that are with us that we have not heard from, if you either had your own situation or if you wanted to speak to something we've discussed already, you should be with us.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, Gus and callers. My situation, I actually have two. I'll start out with the least of the worst ones. So my supervisor, he's, of course, a white man. He's been with the company for at least a couple of decades. I'm not quite sure why, because when I speak to him, his intelligence level of the procedures and the policies is terrible. So I have actually taken the step and complained to his supervisor, who is, of course, also white, and they've said, well, just give him time. He just needs to, because he's actually a new supervisor over me, but it's been almost a year now, but they just say, you know, give him some time to learn it, and he should, you know, everything should be fine. If you have any questions, still go to him. Now, mind you, when I go to him, he does not know what he's talking about, and it ends up him asking me more questions, and I basically have to come to my own conclusions. Well, recently on my work evaluation, I guess what you would call it, he had said, well, now, mind you, now fast forward, this is a year now. This man still barely knows anything, and he's still in the position. So, well, one of my work evaluations, he says, well, if you send me questions, because I email him a lot, if you send me questions, then I also need you to send me an answer. So that way, because he said something along the lines of, I am confident in your knowledge of the procedure, something like that. And I was just highly upset by that. And then on every other subsequent evaluation, it says that same thing. So it definitely, like, makes me hesitant to ask them any questions, and I typically don't ever try to even really communicate with them because I feel like, you know, he's an idiot. Sorry to just put it out there, but that's how I feel. Well, and I honestly feel like there's no one's actually doing anything about it, and I'm starting to get, like, depressed. Because I feel like if I mess up on one of these procedures, and if it has something to do with like a law, like one of the regulations that my company has to go by, then that can come back on me. And there's really nothing that I can't necessarily say, well, he doesn't know, I can't go to him, because I've already made that clear and they're not doing anything about it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that before I started to become more codified, I was hanging out with with non-white people and with white people at my job, and I had a white coworker who I felt like I was friends with. Somehow, somewhere along the lines, the white coworker, the woman, she started to feel comfortable enough with touching me. And almost every time that I see her now, and I usually don't see her that often now, because I've kind of moved around within the company, she feels like she has to touch me. And she does it in front of people. She does it when it's just us. She does it in front of people. And it's not just like a tap on the shoulder. No, it's actually something to where it makes other people feel uncomfortable. And I feel like I've been very introverted all my life, and I barely speak up. So I feel like I've let it go on too long, but I don't want to necessarily cause too much of a stir and, making it known that this is, it's gone definitely too far and too long. I'm not quite sure why she's so envious of a part of my body, but it's something that she kind of feels like she always makes known, whether it's around white people, whether it's around non-white people, it doesn't matter. She always feels like she has to touch me. So those are the two observations I have.
Fascinating. The first one, where you have this stupid guy who doesn't know what he's doing in the job situation, and you are, if I heard correctly, you said you're feeling depressed because you feel like you could end up in a situation where you get blamed for something, and you're not going to be able to say, well, I went to the person that you all hired that's supposed to be able to provide assistance for this, but he's an idiot. So you end up being blamed for something where you're not able to get help from this guy. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, and actually, even to add on to that, prior to them putting him in this position, there was a young black female who knew the position, knew his job, knew everything that he currently does, but they would not give her the position. They kept basically beating around the bush as to why she couldn't have the position, and finally one day when she applied, she said they told her that she would have to be in a different area of the business. So she decided to withdraw her application because she wanted to be in the same area which she had a lot of knowledge of. And then it turns out that they end up hiring this white lady, also not very smart, from right off the street, so basically outside of the company. And so she ended up finally leaving our company because of that.
Just a gentle reminder for listeners. I have said before, and even the caller who wrote in about obtaining degrees, academic success, that doesn't really do anything in terms of I brought this up before as well. I think there are many black people who have ended up being depressed, frustrated, whatever the case, because they thought, hey, if I just, show up and I'm competent and I do quality work, that, hey, I won't have a problem. I'll be accepted. And that's just not what we typically experience at all. You can be super competent, be efficient, making lots of money for the company. You're still just another nigger. I think it's important. I think anytime when, because if I heard correctly, the incompetent person in the position, they were basically saying like, oh man, you're so smart and I trust your judgment and you know what you're doing. I am very leery when I hear that from anyone I suspect of being a racist, because I feel like that's the sort of thing where they try to lure us into being overconfident about what we know or how much power we have, so that then they can kaboom, drop the hammer on us. So I'm real suspicious about hearing that anytime, particularly from individuals who might be white. With the touching thing, people, listeners, if they remember our caller in the D.C. area where she called in over a long period of time to kind of share about this, where she had a similar thing where it was, I think it was a white woman, older white woman, who kept hugging her, and she had even verbalized, like, I'm not comfortable with the touching. I really appreciate it. I have children and, I don't want to pass germs and all that stuff. And this white woman just kept doing it. And she became more deceptive about it, because she would wait to sneak up on her when her back was turned. So she couldn't, be evasive about it, right? She couldn't put her arms up or see it coming or anything. She would wait. Or like, I think one time she even said she was on the phone and she was going to put the phone down, and the white woman snuck up and hugged her from behind then, so she's totally unaware, and, you know, I don't even know what's going on. I'm just being snatched and groped. With that, we've talked about that before. That's why I said I always think it's important, if you start a new job, ask about unwanted touching, sexual harassment. Ask about that so you can make it known that you're very serious about not being a victim of that on the job. I think it can be more difficult to get that stopped if it's something that's been going on for a while and you haven't said anything, you haven't made it known that you're not comfortable with this, or you ask the person to please stop.
Yeah, it's like I feel like I was definitely, because I feel like I called him yesterday and asked about, you know, being friends with non-white people, and I feel like at that point I kind of felt like I was confused, but I don't quite understand where the envy, or because I feel like it is truly envious of the reason why, that's why she's actually touching me, because she kind of led to it, and it's definitely in an inappropriate place, and it makes everybody around uncomfortable because she just does it whenever.
Yeah, I would totally see that as an act, view that as an act of racism, sexual terrorism, and I would just make it very clear that you're not comfortable with that type of touching. Just be very clear about that. I know I've spoke with Mr. Fuller about this before as well, and it was with the exact same situation. It was a black female being hugged by a white woman. Your case, you're saying she's actually touching a body part, but same thing, unwanted touching. And he said, just make it very clear, like, you know, I cannot do that. And then any time forward where if it even looks like she's coming to get close to you, I would back up, you know, hey, we can be courteous, we can smile, we can talk about whatever, but I just don't do a whole lot of, you know, groping on employees in the workplace. You know, this is a business environment. Let's conduct ourselves as such.
I have a question. I have a question of the young lady.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ma'am, is the male that's training you, is he the only one that can train you? Can you request another trainer and just say, I'm just not getting it with this? He's not explaining it well. Maybe somebody else can help me out, help train me on this, whatever you're doing. Is there another person that can train you?
Well, actually, that's the thing. He was hired to be my manager. And so when they hired him, I don't know if they just wanted to make sure, because I feel like his last position, the position that he was in previously, somehow it was, I guess it was being absolved or dissolved or whatever. And so I don't know if it's just that they just wanted to keep him in the company and just place him somewhere. But it's not like, I would be better off just going over the procedures myself than, and it's not necessarily something to do with training. And that's the thing. It's like, he's consistently been incompetent, and I've actually been the only one out of the group, basically out of the group of people that he's over, that has actually stepped up and said something on multiple occasions. So I don't feel like, and actually, the really bad thing about it is that, just referring to like what I said before, like the younger black female, that was the one who knew the procedures and knew the policies inside and out, but they did not care. They just let her leave and just left us with someone who doesn't know. And there's really not too many people within the company who can really give us the guidance that we need.
Do you think the white superior is there? Do you think they know he's incompetent?
Absolutely, because we actually had a meeting, our group, about him, because we had so many concerns, and we actually used to go to the younger black female a lot when he was actually placed as our manager. And he kind of course, felt some type of way about it. And so that's when we end up having a meeting. And I, like I said, I was basically the only one out of the group. There's, I would say, about eight people who we all basically spoke amongst ourselves, and this was black and white people. And we always speak amongst ourselves about, you know, something has to change, but yet I was the only one to actually speak up. And at that time, in that meeting, it was him and his supervisor and then the rest of the group. So that at that point, I address all the issues, and I actually, with me, I come with evidence. I write down notes. I have emails, stuff like that, and I pointed this out, and that's when they're like, okay, we'll give him some time. Time moves forward. He still doesn't know. They're like, okay, we'll give him some more time. He still has a lot of different things on his plate. And then, so I'm like, okay, well, since they're not willing to give me the proper guidance, management, whatever, I ask, well, let me just go to a different area. They're like, no, this is the best fit for you. And so that's, I feel like that's where my depression is starting to come. And I'm actually, like, struggling now. And I feel like if at any point in time, if I make a mistake, I know that I wouldn't be surprised if they were to let me go.
Well, if you make a mistake, you can always fall back on your incompetent training and guidance. And you have your emails and your notes to say, hey, I asked about this and I asked about that. And I never got a response. Can you explain why? You see. You just keep your note. And, you know, don't speak up so much. Don't share your ideas that somebody else can use. Because unless you're going to be a manager yourself and take over his spot, you know, I wouldn't share none of your ideas for their businesses so they could benefit off of you.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to emphasize the make sure you have your notes, because I think that would be very important if anything does come up, that the inadequate training that you received, document when you asking about things that you don't understand or trying to get accurate information to make sure that you're doing correct job. Document and try to have electronic, like email documentation. That way you can have evidence of you seeking assistance when needed and they did not have adequate resources to help you. I think that would be phenomenal to have that documented. We had other people that dialed in as well, just if they either had questions about your situation or any of the previous callers that have dialed in. I just wanted to ask, ma'am, is it okay for us to ask, where exactly is this white woman groping you at? Is it okay to ask?
That's fine. It's my chest. She's very envious of my chest. Not quite sure why, but there it is.
What about terms of harassment?
Exactly. And I would try to be immediate about that. And even if other people are around, that's even great, because then they are witnesses to just make it very clear. This is totally incorrect and unacceptable behavior for the workplace. This needs to stop immediately. We can have a great working relationship, but, you know, let's make sure that we're conducting ourselves in a manner appropriate becoming for the workplace. Does anybody have a suggestion they think would be better for dealing with this sexual terrorism?
Isn't that a police report?
It certainly could be, in my opinion.
See, and that's the thing. I feel like I don't want to give away my – basically, I'm trying to be more codified, and I don't want anyone to really know that I'm – more codified, and really it kind of started because of the group that we were in, and I was, for whatever reason, the blunt of everybody's joke, and I'm not quite sure why, but my appearance started to be part of the joke, and it was actually black men who were making fun of my body, and I guess that's kind of what opened up the door for that, because it's definitely, I'm not homosexual or bicurious or nothing like that, and the female, she's not also, and she actually, oddly enough, she's actually with a black man and been with him for a while, so.
Oh, so she's a real. She's a real racist. I mean, she's with a black man. She's a white woman, you said.
I would think that if a male was to grab someone's, a female's breast at the job, they would be sent out of the job that day. That's inappropriate. It's, and I would probably, since you let it go on, I would say something to her first. Hey, listen, I really feel uncomfortable when you do that. You know, I you know, if you want to say be nice, hey, I still like you and everything, but, you know, that really makes me feel uncomfortable. And after that, she does it again, that sexual harassment. I spoke to her once. She still did it. And there's no way to justify that. A male cannot go and grab a female's breast at the job. That's just not going to happen. And I would imagine the same rule applies for females.
Well, my job, a white female, is getting practically half the department in trouble because she was looked at wrong. And she wrote a letter to HR department about how she was leered at. So if she can do all that, you're being groped. You're being physically touched. You should write that down, send it to HR, and you know, handle that situation, nip it right in the bud. Especially if you don't feel comfortable with it, because that, to me, is a lawsuit. You should go straight to a lawyer, talk to them about it, too, especially if they don't do nothing about it.
I definitely like the idea about writing the letter. I'll definitely make sure I do that. And like I said, I mean, I definitely have a lot of witnesses because it was just actually last week I just so happened to see her, and it was in front of two people that I don't really talk to, but they're in my area, and she just did it. And I'm like, it was just embarrassing. And every time she does it in front of people, it's like I feel weird, to say the least. And then it also, you know, just seeing the look on their face, and it's like, is this some type of freakish lesbian type of thing? And I'm like, I have to give them like a look, like I don't know what's wrong with this person. So, but I appreciate that.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I was just listening with the lady caller about her two problems. The first one is would probably be more difficult to solve because I think on a lot of jobs they don't really keep a good track of training, and the level of it is not necessarily is going to be all the time good unless it's someone they really want to elevate to another status. That's just my thought. And I'm basing it on my experiences on a job that I retired from. It's probably going to be a little bit more difficult to solve that problem. With the second one, I'm probably not going to be codified because it looked like it's gotten to a point. I would seek an opportunity, and so many untold terms, I would let that person know that you touch me again, I'm going to touch you somewhere. And I mean, that's just my thought, because actually, in reality, in a codified way, you have to really reach that right from the start. Right from the start, when a person is raising, because that type of person is very keen on the type of person that they can approach in that way. From my experience, they're very keen. It's almost like a wild animal, and dealing with someone that they perceive as an animal that they can take advantage of because of some sort of quote unquote weakness. And I'm not saying that you have any of that, but that's what their perception is, that sort of thing. And it's already has happened. You'd be surprised about those quote-unquote witnesses. You'd be surprised by how few of them would be when it actually comes to some sort of situation, how few of witnesses you would actually have. It probably would dry up to zero when it comes down to it. You know, maybe if you got an immediate relative like a sister or somebody like that, they may stick around. But in my experiences within the people activity employment, that particular element dries up very quickly when it comes down to some sort of, especially when a white person is involved also. That has a lot to do with it also. Is the person in a supervisory position with you?
The female, no. She's basically at the same level.
Okay. I mean, as I mentioned, what comes to my mind is definitely it's not codified, and it's background, it's something that you don't see a whole lot of ladies doing. But that, there are some now. There are some that would do what I'm that comes to my mind what I'm sharing with you. But and they definitely would do it before a male would do it. But and any chance that I would get in a meeting, because you have employee meetings all the time, and someone of a supervisory position, because that's what they train them to do, to ask their quote unquote subordinates, is everything going well for you, and or something, put it in some kind of question like that, and then hey, bring it up. And from what I'm gathering, what I'm listening from you, as far as what tells me what may be something about your personality, like you really don't want to mention a person. So I don't want to mention a person because I'm afraid of what kind of pushback may happen. But it has happened before, and I'm going to keep bringing it up to you if you keep asking me about it. You know, maybe that would be a solution, at least pointed in the right direction as a solution towards it. Because by that person, that supervisory person, or who is the owner, or maybe whoever that person is, chairman or whatever, CEO, they ask that question because they are asking it from the standpoint to try to find out on what the employees are thinking about and what they're going through and whatever, stuff like that. And just keep bringing it up. Just keep bringing it up. Eventually, they'll find out on who the other person is. They will find, maybe they'll find out who the other person is, and then they'll bring that to them. It's not, I mean, it wouldn't surprise that person, because that person knows what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing is incorrect, but they're just banking on the idea that you're not going to address it. And so far they're correct as far as what I'm hearing. I'm not on your job and I don't know you, but it sounds like so far they feel quite comfortable and they're correct. But you're going to have to start saying something about it, putting some kind of action towards it, because it's not going to change, because that's what some people do. That's what they do. You know, I mean, it's what they do. That's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
I had a question. Go ahead. I'll go after you.
All right. Hey, everybody. How you doing? This is Gerard from Brooklyn. I called a couple weeks ago. I had an incident with the lady in the elevator. I was just calling to give an update. It's been a couple weeks, but I actually, like, the next week I went, I had a meeting with my job when we had a staff meeting. So I was codified, I brought up the situation, you know, what do you do if you feel like somebody's going through far with the sexual thing? I didn't get any response in the meeting. The supervisor pulled me to the side after the meeting, and he asked me what was going on. He wanted to know, you know, what lady was it? And so I didn't really want to give no information like that, but I guess I'm not sure if they figured it out. I don't know what, but ever since then, a lot of the males, especially the white males, have been really aggressive, volatile towards me. I actually got a new job, so I don't work there anymore, but there was the supervisor knows me from the boxing gym. I used to box. His son boxes, so he knows me from the boxing gym. So I guess they found out that I used to box, and I think with the whole situation with the female, she was they were pretty upset about that, and they kept asking me questions. A lot of the white males that never spoke to me before started questioning me a lot. I wasn't really given no answers, so they really you know, tried a couple of times to start altercations. I didn't really give into it. Nobody really like put their hands on me or nothing like that, but they tried to say certain things that will you know, lead to an altercation. But you know, I was codified. I just let certain things go. So I just started, I'm at work right now actually, but I work nights now. I just started on this job Monday. So my last week was last week. So I had put my 2 weeks in. So I was there for 2 weeks. And then the last day I was there, I'm cleaning out my locker. And I think I said before that, we deliver books and movies to certain prisons in a certain districts in the county. And so when I'm emptying, so the last day I'm emptying out my locker, I don't know if you guys know, but there's a, well, I'm pretty sure you guys know, there's the Spike Lee movie, Jungle Fever, the cover of the DVD has like a black hand and a white hand. So I'm emptying out my stuff. And the last thing on the shelf of my locker was, was the Jungle Fever cover. And it had the black hand X'd out, and it had the word nigger on top of it. So, you know, that was real interesting. But I got out of the job. I got a better job at night. But it was a hell of an experience the last 3 weeks. And I meant to call in. I've just been busy. But I really wanted to let you guys know that I'm actually at work right now. So I can't really talk that much, but I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Thank you for the update. If you have time, I know you're on the job, but if you have time, quickly, what exactly did they say to you to try to provoke a fight? If you can give like a specific example, and then knowing how things played out, would you do the exact same thing again to address the situation, or would you handle it differently?
The things they tried to do to provoke was I guess I'm pretty sure the racist supervisor let them know, first of all, that it was my last 2 weeks. So and let them know that I used to box. So I think that made a lot of males, white males, uncomfortable for whatever reason. And a lot of them is just, you know, there's a couple guys in there that say they do MMA. And, you know, one of the white males came up to me, and he was like, oh, you know, I know you box. I know you. He was like, oh, well, I know you box. I do MMA. You know, I'm pretty sure I can handle you or something like that. And, I turned around and I said, what? You know what I mean? And then they would, you know, be like, oh no, I'm just playing. But they would, and then another white man was like, he wanted to, we were leaving work, and he was like, oh, well, you know, I kickbox and I box sometimes too. You're not the only one. Would you, you know, we could spar if you want to. And they would just say little slick little comments like that. But I just felt like the energy was, they wanted me to put my hands on them. So something happened, and it was really over this female. And that was basically the vibe. It was always, they were really questioning me a lot about, oh, well, what was the girl you was talking about? Or they were bringing up the girl, well, was it so-and-so who was doing this? And these people never talked to me before. Like, they didn't even like me. So it was just a lot of incidents where they were asking questions, and then they would say little slick comments. A lot of them I don't even remember. Like, I just let them slide off my shoulder. But I do remember the guy who said he did MMA said, he thinks he can handle me. And then another guy wanted to know if I wanted to spar sometimes. I don't, you know, he thinks he can handle me. So two dudes said that to me on the way out of work one night. And it almost got into a situation where it almost got brought to a level where I felt like I was going to have to handle myself, because then I thought they were going to try me, especially when I'm walking to my car at night, because we leave sometimes. We used to leave the building at night, and the guys who stayed later, we used to, you know, walk across the street to the parking lot, and it was kind of dark, and they just kept bringing up things about boxing. And I knew the racist supervisor told them, because they never knew this about me. And then all of a sudden, he lets it go the last 2 weeks, and they were just acting real hostile, acting like, you know, they were going to do something. But, you know, I can handle myself, and they knew that. But I think they wanted me to do something first, and, you know, I didn't do it. And as far as the question, would I do it again, I thought I was very codified. I mean, I think I would do it again. I just feel like it was just a lot of jealousy. I don't know why I have no interest in white women, but you could just tell the mood changed after I brought that up. Like, it totally changed for the next 3 weeks. So would I do it again? I mean, I thought, you know, I did it correctly. I'm not sure. I think I would, though, if I had to. So I don't know.
Definitely appreciate the update. Allison Manswell, she's a black female, and she wrote a book about workplace racism. I'm going to see if she has suggestions for sexual harassment, unwanted touching, how to deal with that, particularly if it's coming from a white person, white woman, or a white man in the job, to see what she says. But that's one I think we should be talking about regularly, because it's so common. It seems like it comes up about once a week or so, some form of unwanted touching, petting, sexual comments, and just figuring out a way to deal with all that successfully. But I definitely appreciate the update, sir. Other folks have comments? I think, Roz, you were attempting to participate.
Yes, I did have my own workplace racism incident, but I'll just say again, just for self-protection, that people can get something called a tactical pen. There's one that's about $19.95 on Amazon. It's called Hoffman and Richter. And I think it's, yeah, Hoffman and Richter Stinger. And it's basically aircraft grade aluminum coated in titanium. This is an object that CIA and FBI agents carry everywhere they go. They can take it everywhere because it's an actual functional pen. But you can use it to put down somebody that's 300 pounds a second. So you don't have to break your hand. You don't have to hurt your foot. It will allow you to take them down quickly and efficiently so you can go about your business. And that's something that I recommend, you know, for people to carry, especially females. I think it's something that's really good for you to have on your person because, like I said, you can take it anywhere, but it's something you can use, you know, for self-defense in a situation like that where you feel like you're threatened and you don't have to actually, you know, put your hands or whatever body part you would defend yourself with. You can use that instead, and it works incredibly. So I would just suggest people get their hands on one of those or some variation of that if you have the ability to do so. I think it could potentially save your life. I have a couple of interesting workplace observations this week. Kind of interesting. Earlier today, I was talking to a young black male who I've actually known for probably over about a year and a half. He's been in now, and I actually helped to train him when he first came to the company. So we were talking when he first started in the company. We would talk about this all kinds of stuff, and he told me about his background. I told him about mine, and we were just kind of getting to know each other. We both were into music. He's also is a musician as well, so that kind of helped to facilitate our bonding, I guess, during the time I was training him. And, you know, I just kind of threw a warning out there, you know, just be careful, you know, with these white folks, because I saw some of the things that they were capable of before. And I said, just be careful, you know, don't put any real trust into them. And, you know, if they tell you something and it doesn't sound right, always get a second and or third opinion. That way you can kind of, you know, steer clear of any sort of, you know, potential negative situation. So he was like, you know, he kind of took it light and was like, you know, I always do all right, you know. And he really just didn't worry about what I said. And, you know, a couple of other occasions I said, you know, if you really want to just be codified in some form or fashion just to make sure you're protecting yourself to be preemptive, to avoid any sort of negative situation. So we hadn't had contact for a while as far as sitting near each other because he's in a different area than I am physically, and he's not on the team that I'm on. It's only four of us, and he's not on that team. So today I was actually going out to lunch, and we bumped into each other. So when we see each other, we always, you know, give each other acknowledgement and speak or whatever the case may be. So he had pulled me to the side, and he was telling me about my direct supervisor, who is a white female who took over the job from the black female that I used to work under before. She quit the company, which was the best decision she ever made. From what I understand, she's doing well where she is, and this company is so horrific as far as just what's going on a daily basis. So he basically pulled me to the side and told me about my supervisor, the fact that she's been trying to get him fired for at least the last 6 months. So I'm like, well, how did this happen? So come to find out, you can get the cowbell prepared. He told me that she had made sexual advances towards him on the job. He thwarted those sexual advances, and ever since, she's been, he said she's made up different things to try and get him in trouble. She's tried to put him in different positions where he can make a mistake that she can try and capitalize off of to get rid of him, and she's been unsuccessful. She just tried to get him written up. Just last week, he told me she tried to get him written up for some frivolous nonsense, and she's gotten HR involved, and she's actually gotten a couple of other white female supervisors involved. But none of those people are really aware of the sexual element and the fact that she did come on to him first, and once he did not respond to her advances in the way that she wanted, it turned into what it's become now. So I talked to him, and I told him, I'd asked him had he been documenting these incidences just to make sure he has, you know, some sort of history there, and he said that he has been documenting it. So I also suggested that he get a USB recorder. I did let him know that in the state of New York it is legal to record your conversations as long as one of the two parties being recorded is privy to the fact they're being recorded. And, of course, if he has any conversations with anyone, he's one of the two parties, so it's good to go. So he was actually aware of that. So I explained to him where to get it. I actually went and sent him a link to the area on Amazon where he could actually directly purchase it, because it's only like $11.99 for the USB recorder. I explained to him how it works and how he can utilize it to facilitate recording his days and any conversations, any meetings he has with anyone, so that way he has their voices recorded. So if they say that they didn't say something they actually said, he can always play the recording to cover himself. So he was really thankful about that. But what he acknowledged was the fact that I tried to warn him earlier. And, you know, he just, black male, Chicago, just a different type of lifestyle, I think, where he did not take racism, white supremacy seriously. So when he met me, and I wasn't overly intense with it, but I just wanted to look out for another black male and say, hey, you know, just be careful and be codified in how you function, and give him insight on how to avoid the situation. And he actually acknowledged that he wished he listened to me before, because he could have, you know, avoided this now. I didn't chastise him or anything like that. You know, I said to him, this was what I was trying to avoid. I didn't even know this was happening to you. You know, I said, I'm sorry this is happening to you. But I said, that's why I tried to have those conversations, just to help you avoid, because I know how this place is, and I know how white people function in general. So you just always want to deal with them in that way. So actually, his whole mindset has shifted now, because he's seen them form like Voltron on them, because she's involved other white supervisors and even human resources in her attempts to get him removed from the company. So I just want to throw that out there. It's just something that really kind of caught me off guard, because, like I said, we would see each other in passing, but this is the first time he actually just pulled me to the side and wanted to have this conversation. And I just found it fascinating. And, again, I just wanted to do something to assist him in trying to alleviate the situation as best I can. Then, wow, yesterday I had gone for a job interview. This is the second interview for the job that I told you I went for previously. They called me back for the second time. I actually saw another black male who transitioned from my company to the same company I interviewed in. He's the one who actually mentioned that job to me. So we had a conversation, and the interview went very well. So right now I'm just waiting to get the final word. The next step will be for them to get my references, and then from there, once they contact the references and verify that, then it would be basically moving forward with the hiring process. So hopefully that, you know, goes the way that I'm hoping it does, so I can transition out of this plantation that I'm in. But on the way home, this is crazy. I'm standing there waiting for my wife to pick me up from the train station, and there was a black female who was getting dropped off at the train station by another black female. They were in an SUV. So they pull up right in front of me in order for her to get out of the car and then, I guess, prepare for the train to arrive. So there's a white woman in a car behind them, and she's beeping furiously as if the black woman couldn't move fast enough for her friend to move the vehicle out of her way. So once the woman starts beeping crazy, the black woman purposefully takes her sweet time. Because then she says to her, you know, you can't give me a chance to get out the car. You know, what the hell's wrong with you, is what she says. So the white girl just literally, her windows were up, but you could hear her screaming and cursing through the closed windows. So then the black woman literally, like, told her, get out the car. You know, she wanted to get physical. So I said, sis, you don't really want to do that right now. So her friend pulls off, and she jumps in front of the white woman's car. She said, now what you going to do? hit me. And I said, ugh, no, you don't want to do that. So she ends up cursing, having a big cursing fest with this white female. And then she said, she started basically continuing to curse. And I said to the woman, I said, you know, sis, I said, I totally understand why you're upset. I said, they're terrorists. I said, this is what they do. I said, you know, they, I said, she's acting with you now as they've acted with us for 500 years. This is how white supremacists behave. Don't expect anything less from them. And she literally, like, she was talking to me from across the street, but I was able to just kind of talk to her and let her know, hey, I understood where you were coming from. And eventually the woman went to catch the train, and I just sat there and I thought to myself, because when I was younger, I would have done something like that too if one of them pissed me off. And I was just like, well, wow. I said, all it took was for that white woman to just get enraged and, you know, just floor the pedal, and she would have been just massacred at that point. And she was willing to put her body on the line in order to have an argument with the racist about her rushing her to get out of a vehicle. So I just didn't think it was really worth it, but I did want to calm her down because she did want to have a physical altercation with the white female. So thank goodness the white female was scared anyway. As far as just her reaction, she didn't want any trouble. She just wanted to curse the woman out and then go on about her business to catch the train, which is exactly what she did. But ultimately, just the whole idea of putting your life on the line that way with a white terrorist, very dangerous, very, very dangerous. And then today, the same supervisor who my coworker had the issue with, I had a discussion with her today because I called out yesterday in order to go to handle the interview. And I have FMLA, so my supervisor does not know that I have FMLA. I just acquired it in August, about mid-August of this year is when I started the process, and then by mid-September is when everything was completed. And the type of FMLA I have is what they call intermittent, which means that I can call out if I don't feel well on a given day at any time and take that day off or a partial day or whatever it is. And basically, it'll be I have a total of 468 hours that I can break up in any which way that I'd like in order to facilitate the FMLA. And then usually it runs concurrent for a year. So after a year, it resets as long as you don't go over those hours. So she had come to me because I had taken off recently because I really wasn't feeling well. But yesterday I took off because I wanted to go to the interview. So she had written me an email asking me if I went to the doctor to bring a doctor's note because she said that I had a previous absence that was considered negative, but this is because she didn't know I had FMLA. So then I wrote her back and I told her about the condition I have and, you know, then not the details about the condition, but the fact that I have a medical condition that facilitated me getting FMLA. And so at that point, she was like, oh, wow. And, you know, she tried to be understanding and empathetic and whatever it was. And then she said, well, I really didn't want to have to go to the second, to a write-up process. So, you know, I was just worried about it, so I wanted to make you aware. So I said, well, actually, I should have made you aware of the FMLA thing. I really didn't think about it. So I just said, well, I apologize. I didn't let you know. But I said, yeah, you know, it's okay. So then she asked me if I wanted to use just take the time off as unpaid or if I wanted to use, like, my vacation time or whatever the case may be to cover the time that I was out so that way I don't lose money on my paycheck. So I said, well, you know, you can use the vacation time because I'm working on transitioning anyway, so I'm not going to really need vacation anymore, even though she's not aware of that. But ultimately, then again, she had a potential in regards to potentially harassing and terrorizing me. But due to me being preempted with the FMLA, I was able to, you know, protect myself from even her attempting to, even though that wasn't her approach. I don't trust her anyway. And after what my coworker told me, I really don't trust her. So those are my workplace racism incidences. And thank you for listening to what I have to say. I'll meet my line.
Appreciate that, Roz. Black self-respect, trying to help out another black coworker and just trying to give him some suggestions, the importance of being serious, suspicious that we do have enemies. In the stalls next to us, office next to us. The first incident that you shared with this black male being terrorized, I guess he thwarted the advances that were made towards him, and then she was on white team to participate in abusing and mistreating this black male. That's why I think it is so important to talk about sexual harassment on the job, because that situation, it can go bad any way that you deal with it. If you decide to say nothing, it can just escalate, and you could just have to deal with being sexually groped, molested, fondled on the job for however long you stay there. You could just try and address it with the person that's doing it directly, and then they can retaliate and just try and go and get their friends and turn it around. Even if they don't bring up the what they've been doing in terms of sexual harassment, they could just try and get you fired or get you in trouble or written up. If you try to bring it up with someone else to get help in the situation, if they are white, they could just participate in practicing racism and turn it around. Oh, you were leering at this white woman, or, you know, doing this. So, I mean, it can just cause so many problems. I'm an advocate of try to nip that in the bud immediately, because I've just seen where that can get, it tends to get much worse and tends to get much more difficult to stop the longer you let it go without anything being said. But that's just my view. I know everybody does not agree. If other folks, if they have commentary they would like to share, feel free to chime in. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate.
Hey, Gus, can I speak to what you just said? Because I
For
think
sure.
it's very important what you touched on. I think we have to really start taking a certain view at these tactics, because when the black female was talking about this white woman grabbing her chest like she was, this is a modified form of rape. That's essentially what it is, because it's she's touching you in a sexual manner. I'm sure it wasn't sensual. It's probably volatile or violent, and ultimately she's violating your personal space and she's touching you and it's unwanted. So this is, again, another form of consumption that we have to remain cognizant of, that white people are trying to consume us. And some of them are energy vampires, spiritual vampires, and just cannibals. And that, what was done to that female, what was done to my coworker, is a form of cannibalism. It's a form of consumption. It's a form of rape, a modified form of rape. So I guess is absolutely correct. I think the best thing to do is nip it in the bud as quickly as possible. My coworker did attempt to do that in this situation, but because she was a supervisor, she used that as her means to exploit harassing him. And she's been fairly successful from what I understand. He's thwarted it so far, like he told me, she's been trying for 6 months. But the idea is that she keeps modifying her behavior and adding other white female terrorists to the mix to try and make his life as uncomfortable as humanly possible. So I think it's something we really have to remain cognizant of, is the fact that these people are trying to consume us. And these are some of the different ways that it rears its head. That's why I think Delectable Negro is a very powerful book we can read in the future that'll help to bring that home in a way that I think will change a lot of people's lives once they get to absorb the contents of that book. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Just wanted to ask a question for Roz.
Sure.
What effect does the pen have? I'm just curious.
The pen, what it is that it's because it's grown, it has like a dull point to it, so you can actually use it to break out of a car in an emergency, like to break a window if you're stuck in a building or stuck in a car. So whenever it hits a specific spot, it gives a concentrated blow from a piece of metal. So if I hit someone in the head, it'll probably fracture or shatter their skull. If someone grabs me on the hand and I slam it on their hand, I'll break their hand. So basically, anywhere you put it, they're going to have such intense pain, or you're going to break something or fracture something. So the idea is that the whole use of it is to not to have any prolonged battle like you would see in a movie. It's to take them out as quickly as possible, lay them down, and get the hell out of Dodge so that you don't have to deal with any potential further contact with that person. So really, it's something that you can use to completely disable someone extremely quickly. You can hit someone in the jaw and shatter their jaw, because it's a concentrated blow from a piece of aircraft-grade aluminum coated in titanium. And because it's in a pen form, you can take it anywhere. They're not going to say, oh, this is a weapon, you know. So you can literally carry it anywhere. You clip it to your shirt, and no one really knows. Hey, can I borrow your pen? Sure. Oh, this is a pretty nice thing. Yes, it is. And you keep it moving. But if someone comes at you in a way in which you have to defend yourself, you can put them down extremely quickly. Matter of fact, I have to find the name of the CIA officer, because he actually has done shows with Rachel Ray, and he's actually showed people how to use it and different techniques that the CIA has taught on how to use it to bring people down. And as long as you know how to fight, you just hold it in your hand, and you any way you put it, they're going to have excruciating pain or you're going to shatter something, and they're going to let you go. They're going to, you know, squirm back in pain and agony. And like I said, you lay them down, and then you can keep them moving and get out of there as quickly as possible.
Oh, okay. This is one more thing. This is like a scenario question type of thing. On the job, if a male, let's say especially if a black male, right in front of a lot of people, gropes a female. It don't even have to be a white female, non-white black female, and she reacts by slapping him in the face. Would it be any type of employment pushback when something like that happens? So if it's two females, and that other female, the aggressive white female, gropes another female coworker, and she reacts in the same way, would there be any type of reactionary difference is what I'm saying. That's just something I'm just kind of like putting out there, and I'll listen to what anybody has to say about that.
For sure. People that we have not heard from, if you had observations or commentary you wanted to share, you should be with us.
Yes, may I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, greetings, everyone. I'm Sister Locks calling from Baltimore. How's everyone doing?
Right poorly. Glad to hear you.
Okay, well, thank you. I am calling for two things, but I'm just going to tell you about one today. I was recently terminated from my position, and it was definitely racism and white supremacy in play. Fortunately, I have acquired a new job. However, upon signing all the various documents to be hired, one of the documents is an arbitration agreement, which I have never seen in my entire life. And so I was able to read it thoroughly. And to bottom line, the document is basically saying you cannot take them to court. You have to go through this particular company, which I'm sure they're in cahoots with. And I'm very sure that that racism and white supremacy is at play with this. And I just wanted to know if anyone on the panel has ever had to sign an arbitration agreement and is aware of any of the methods or steps that I can take to at least cover myself prior to starting the job.
Huh. Anyone had to deal with that in signing on with a new job?
Does this have anything to do with the union involved as well?
No, it does not. I've actually, I don't know if this will help you, but I've actually done a little research on the arbitration group that they're using. And it's the same arbitration group that Donald Trump uses. And if you're familiar with Marcus Washington, he's suing one of the larger entertainment groups. And the arbitration company that they use is one that's actually helping them fight against him for his huge lawsuit. It's over $5 million.
Any other folks? Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Unions use arbitrators too. So it's probably going to be somewhat like the same situation. If you have an issue with the company, you bring it to the arbitrator, and the arbitrator forces the company to come to the table for a resolution. So if that's how they want to go about it, I mean, it doesn't cost you anything to do it. Whereas you might go to court, it'll cost you for a lawyer and all this and all that. You know, you can still refer with a lawyer, but you come to the table by yourself.
Is it possible for you to maybe like speak to a lawyer, or maybe even like a, I know like people who do like prepaid legal, which is definitely a many steps down from a lawyer, but to maybe speak with them to get their input on it. Because I mean, I definitely understand, because if you're saying that they have no morals or no conscience about representing Donald Trump or other harassment, that definitely seems like that's red flags to me, because if they were to do something to you, whether it's racist or sexist, then that seems like they would, no matter what happens, that company would automatically side with them. So that's definitely alarming.
Absolutely. That's one of my concerns. So just looking for some feedback. And I appreciate all the feedback that I can get.
I think even if it wasn't a firm connected to Donald Trump, I think just any employment, any place of employment, like the situation in North Carolina with House Bill HB, was it HB 52 or whatever it was, the big thing that they were upset about, the bathroom restrictions. I thought the more important aspect of that was them saying that you could not file any sort of, if you had a conflict or an allegation of wrongful termination with a place of employment, that you could not take them to court. You couldn't take them to state court. I thought that was one of the more important aspects of that bill that's not being discussed as much as the bathroom aspect. I think any place that you work where they are saying, well, they're setting conditions that are contingent upon you being hired, they are placing rules in place that are going to favor them. If there's any sort of dispute, if there's any sort of disagreement, if there's any sort of allegation that they have mistreated you in some manner, that they're already going to have a process in place that is favorable to them, that is going to be biased to them. I think that's super important to understand going into a work environment. And I think also why Mr. Fuller recommends going with the Constitution so that you can kind of have some tools that you can use that supersede some of the things that they might want to do in terms of keeping you on their rules or in their arbitration system, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. That is exactly what the arbitration agreement is saying. As I, you know, that's exactly what it is. That's what I surmise, that you cannot take them to court. You have to go through them first. And actually, there is a fee involved. There are fees. There are fees involved.
Do you know if that's something that's legal for the state that you're in? Because I know, like, I'm in Ohio, and I think it's like a right-to-work state. Is that, do you know if that's something that is legal for that state?
Yes, actually, I did a little research on that, and it is legal. There are different little clauses that aren't allowed in Maryland that are allowed in other states, but basically their documents, they have definitely crossed their T's and dotted their I's. I am assuming that the companies that they represented, this is just an assumption, that they have had harassment problems and probably larger issues before, and this contract right here kind of gets them gets them in the clear. It clears them from any anyone pursuing court of law. That's what I see collectively. So I'm not sure if that's it, but that's what I'm reading. And at this time, I don't have time to really go through it, but I can like read bits and pieces as I call back from here on out, just to get like a better understanding.
That would probably be cool if you have the time and interest, once you kind of get more time to go through the document, to kind of share some of the significant portions that stand out. I was just going to ask, you said with the arbitration process, do you have to pay out of pocket if that's something that you choose, like to engage in? Do you have to pay out of pocket for any sort of arbitration?
Yes, there's a fee chart, actually. I went on the company's website and I noticed they have a chart for fees. It's not mentioned, it's not in the contract, but I actually dug a little deeper and just looked into the company to see what they were about. And there are fees, but initially when you file, there's not a fee. But if you want to like meet in person, then there's a fee for that. And if you want to meet again, there's a fee for that. And, you know, it's like an a la carte type of thing where, you know, everything that you do, they attach another fee onto it. Similarly to an attorney, you know, similarly, in this case, you can't go through the courts. Very interesting, because I've never seen this before.
Very conniving, in my opinion. as you go through the docket, I'd be interested in hearing some of the details that you read and find out more about it. But I mean, that's the sort of thing I think is great, to have as much of that information up front, so you know what you're getting into. If you begin to have any problems on the job, you already in advance know the procedure that they're going to try to lead you down. So you can already have some strategies in place for what you want to do, so this works out to your best interest. I think that's the significance.
I have a question. You said you can't go to the courts at all, or you have to go through the arbitrator first, and then if he can't, or if you can't get a settlement, then it can be proceeded to a court of law.
You go through the arbitrator first, and there's also a series of things that you must do. Like, for instance, you just can't, if you don't agree with their findings, then I don't know the right terms, but I'm just going to say, if you don't agree with it, then you can appeal. But I think you have to like go through this appeal process first, and then go to the court. So it's by that time you're racking up like $5,000 or $6,000 in fees. So it's very interesting. And if anyone gets the, I can actually send a link. But Marcus Washington was smart enough to actually tape his arbitration his conversation with the arbitrators on SoundCloud. So you can see where they're very sneaky and they're, you know, trying to talk around him. But he's highly intelligent and very effective. And this is just him with the arbitrators.
Are the employees on the job, are they unionized?
No, this is not a union.
Okay.
I can see that.
I can see that happening on a lot of jobs. On what you're talking about, especially. Ones where the employees are not don't have an organized union. I can see that happening on a lot of jobs, because that's what owners do. They try to make it as unpleasant as possible for the employees, knowing that, you know, people got to work, but at the same time they're going to put things in the favor to whereas. If something goes wrong, they can't be harmed in the process. But it just reminded me of something that I brought up to Gus and everybody else. Fire Captain Faye Davis, I think I mentioned weeks ago that she was suing Dade County Fire Department because of them not promoting her. I just found out. Now, this is from a third source. It's not exactly from the newspaper or anything else that could be considered to be factual, although the newspaper is not factual in a lot of cases. But it's from a third party that basically said that they had the court appearance / trial, and it went to a mistrial because something about the a female that was involved with the court proceedings. I think they had been talking about it out of turn, so it went through a mistrial. And the way that sounds like to me, anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like to me it's just going to be a process where Ms. Davis is going to have to spend some more of her own money to go back through the process again, which is not unusual. That's something that they do on jobs is they play on the fact that the person who is suing is going to run out of time and energy and money before they get anything of correctness out of what they set out to do. So that's an update on that with Miss Faye Davis, Captain Faye Davis.
Any of the other folks who dialed in, if you had a question either about the situation we've been talking about or anything the other callers brought up, or if you had your own situation or observations, anyone we have not heard from at all, you should be with us.
And may I be heard?
May I be heard?
Yes. Let's get the female caller first.
Okay, everybody. Thank you for taking my call today. And I got two workplaces. I'm out of Iowa, and I don't know if anybody remember what happened with me, but I'm not working right now. I was fired because of job refusal. But the one that I have is I applied at a job, and I got the job, but I didn't pass the drug test. I went to Colorado Springs a couple weeks ago, and it was my two friends, they got married. They're military folks, and it was a weekend wedding party. So we celebrated all weekend, and they got married on Saturday night. But I came back and applied at a job, and I actually got hired when I came back the next day, took the drug test, didn't pass it. The medical people called me, and they were asking me, you know, do you take any drugs that can have marijuana in them? And I told them no, but I told them I did go to Colorado Springs, and I was, you know, it was a wedding party that I went to. And they told me, okay, we understand, and if you want to, we can't tell you what the manager of the store that you apply to is going to say, but if you want to, you can go and just explain to them what happened, and there's a chance that you could still get hired. But I didn't go and see what they were going to say, because I already know what they were going to say, so I didn't even go and up there and do that. And my second one is I've worked a lot of call center jobs. So about 6 or 7 years ago, I was working at this call center job, tech support. Worked there for a couple of years. It was great. It was a larger company that would get contracts from other companies, and we would help them out. So I don't work there anymore. That was a long time. But a couple months ago, I get a letter in the mail saying that there's a class action lawsuit out against this company that I'm a part of, because they did this while I was working there. What they were doing is when we were punching in on the computer to start our day, we were getting charged, or we weren't getting paid for getting prepared for the day, like for putting on our headset and for bringing up all of the systems that we had to bring up. So they were not paying us for that. An employee or more than four or five employees must have got together and sued them. And so now I got that letter in the mail. I don't know about any dollar amount or anything. It could be like a $2 check, who knows, because I'm sure there was a lot of employees involved in that. And I just wanted to point that out and say that, because that's the games they'll play. Even if it was just 2 or 3 minutes, if they can take that from you, they will. But some of the employees, they did a lawsuit, so they're going through that right now. And I haven't got an update. I got that letter months ago. And the last one is, I was going out to eat with me and the children, and I have teenagers, so they're looking at possibly starting to work. So we went to this popular fast food restaurant they were hiring. We walked in there. We were going to order something, but one of the employees behind the counter he was going off. He, you know, I don't want to work here anymore. Loud. He cuss words, everything. It didn't even seem safe. We didn't even eat there. But when we got in the car and we were driving back home, I asked the children, you know, you all are going to get into the workplace. How would you handle someone like that? You know, yeah, he was walking out, he was quitting, but he seemed like he was aggressive in doing it. My daughter said she would, if it didn't seem like it was getting safe, she would just leave. And my son said the same thing, and I agree with him that that was the correct thing to do. And those are the things that I had. That's my updates and my two workplace racisms. And thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing. I guess before I get comments from other folks who are tuning in, just that moron says consistently sobriety would be best under conditions of racism. One of the things that I've said as well, even if with all this legalization, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to change having drug testing for different places of employment. They even have some of that still in Washington State where they can drug test if you are going to apply for a job there. And I've also said that the racism aspect with those tests, that they've had the data for years, for decades now, that those tests frequently can be biased against black people, where they're testing for THC, the active agent in cannabis, it's saying that your test, that you failed your test when that isn't true, or if you're around people and they're consuming, it can get in your hair, depending on how they test, if they're testing for it in your hair or in your urine or whatever it is, that if you're around people and they're, particularly if they're smoking, where it can be in the air, it can get in your hair and what have you, where you can end up testing positive. Just lots to think about with all of that. And in my opinion, I suspect that's one where whites have a lot of discretion. If they say that it's a drug test issue, where if you had been white, maybe this is a big deal, maybe it's not. I could be in error, but that's my general assessment on that. The other folks, did they have questions, particularly people we haven't heard from? Did you all have comments you wanted to get in or questions?
Gus, I did want to speak to what you just discussed, too. Over my studies, I found that specifically black people, even black people who do not use marijuana, have tested positive for marijuana. And from what the studies that I've read have shown, it's something about our melanin that triggers that reaction. So there are black people who have never been around people who smoke marijuana, never touched it themselves, and still tested positive. So you're absolutely right. And just something else I wanted to throw out there. The black female did say that she's done like call center jobs and things of that nature. You might want to try a website called Angel List. On that site, they have startup jobs, and startup jobs basically don't even do drug testing. They tend to pay extremely well. And it's something that you might want to look into for your area. There might be some startup company that might be looking to hire someone to do customer service, phone work, things of that nature. And they tend to pay, I would say, probably top salaries for that sort of work. And they don't drug test pretty much. You can just go, you know, you go through the interview process. Once you've made it through the interview process and they check your references or whatever else they might do, you just get the job and, you know, you can move forward. So that's something for, you know, for you and maybe other people who might be into that same field. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Tell me that website again, please.
Sure. It's AngelList, AngelList.com.
Okay. Thank you so
Angel
much.
Yes, AngelList. You're welcome, and I wish you the best and anyone else who you know, might be able to utilize that to their benefit. Thank you.
Right on.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Jarell again. This doesn't really have to do with workplace racism, but I don't get a chance to call in that much. I just wanted to say, to show it, I think Ms. Green with, about the marijuana was really good, and I just wanted to say shout out to Dr. Wilson and God bless her. I stopped smoking weed after her death as a tribute to her because I really wanted to stop, but after she passed, I really made it a tribute to her, a tribute to myself that I was going to stop because she really changed my mind about marijuana. So I just wanted to shout out Dr. Wilson and say that was a great show. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Charlotte Green and Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing, always good to keep her in our thoughts and prayers. Anybody that we missed completely, or I guess even before I do that, one person did write in. She's been updating us over the past few weeks about her workplace situation. She was terminated. They said she didn't contact a dispatcher on her job, some lowly excuse to get rid of her. She had reported sexual harassment on the job, also something that had been going on for a while, where she didn't say anything about it at first. She wrote in the update. She said, yesterday I had an appeal hearing for unemployment after having three different people write letters saying that I did not report to the dispatcher when I returned from a run. My former employer did not show up, but instead sent in a fax to say that they would not be participating in the hearing. The hearing lasted about 10 minutes, with the judge asking basic questions about the job and why I was discharged. I was asked if there was anything else I wanted to add. The judge started shaking his head no to indicate to me to say no, to not have anything to add. After the hearing, the judge turned off the recorder and immediately told me that he was shaking his head no because he had already determined that I had won and he didn't want me to say anything else. I was surprised because the judge was white, but also pleased that it went in my favor. I'm glad I continued to fight because I wanted to give up. I think that's important, too, because I think even the conversation today that we've had, just talking about a lot of times, that is the strategy that racists will use. They will just wear you down, and everybody has a breaking point. I don't care how much. Everybody, if you are a human being, you have a breaking point where you just get tired. And I mean, when you're dealing with racism, white supremacy, a system means you have lots of resources, including lots of other whites that you can pull in to work for you and do things and tie things up in court. So this, you know, can end up going on for years and years and years and years and costing lots of money. And you keep having to run all over town and go here and go there. And you just get tired of messing with it and dealing with it. And particularly if you're just one person kind of doing it by yourself, they can simply wear you down. That is a strategy that racists frequently employ. So perseverance is certainly, patience is certainly something we will need as attempted counter-racist. But I'm glad she stuck it through and fought out her hearing for getting her benefits. Other folks have comments, particularly anybody that we have not heard from. Do you have commentary you want to get in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, you were speaking to, I guess, being fed up. And I just want, basically, I quit my job the other day, and I feel a lot happier. I haven't been working for, like, 3 days. And I say I feel like a burden has been let off my back. And I just wanted to say that. And I might share some other stuff later.
Hmm. What was the reason for you quitting, if we may ask?
It was just really far from my house, and I just became jaded. Like, I sold cars, and, like people give you a lot of objections, and usually you overcome them. But, like, I was just to the point where somebody just said anything to even remotely sound like they weren't going to buy a car, I just shut down. So I just became real jaded, and, like, I don't know, I felt like I didn't have confidence in the process anymore, so I just quit.
Hmm. Do you have a plan for your exit strategy?
I do have another job. I didn't just quit without another job. But I mean, even if I didn't have another job, though, I feel like I would have quit. So I don't think the plan was necessarily the reason I quit. The reason I quit was because what was going on at the job. So.
Right on. This is a constant assault. Retired firefighter, you were going to comment?
Yes, I just wanted to compliment the female speaker when she was clinicking her offspring about the incident that they witnessed at the fast food restaurant. I like that when parents get right on something that they saw and with the children and involve them in like a clinic about, you know, what do you think should be the correct way, because that's basically is teaching codified behavior, you know, and I really admire that and the way it sounded is that that's something that she does not just with that particular incident, but it sounds like it's something that she does on a common basis. That's a real good thing. with someone, a non-white black person, especially that's attempting to be a parent on a daily basis. I'll applaud her for that.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Anyone else that we missed completely who has not been able to share at all who had a hand up?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I had quite a bit of observations, so I'll try and make them as quick as possible. The first was the circuit rider, or the pretty much the newsletter that goes out monthly. Like on this past one, coming into October, there was two things that was very interesting. The first was there was a non-white person that retired recently, and this person basically was saying she didn't want any kind of phony parties and some sense of false appreciation for her. She just wanted to just leave and just be done with it. So they pretty much made a tribute, a small little paragraph tribute to this person. But her and her sister works there. This is how they get to work. Two non-white females, they use the photograph of her sister, okay, like major error. They use the picture of her sister to say that it was her that retired. So I'm thinking this is incorrect, but they never ended up changing it. So I guess they didn't really see that it was that much big of a deal. And the second one was I was in the newsletter for helping out two black male children, and their mother and father was there to get a marriage license. So I had helped them color some pictures with crayons and whatnot, and the characters they had to the color for the children to color was a lot of pictures of the Frozen characters. So what was interesting was that all of the other characters were very, you know, generic, abstract animals like frogs and giraffes and stuff, but they kept going for the Frozen. You know, I noticed that, and so they were starting to color that, and I helped them color some things, you know, just to interact. And the white female got a picture of it, and she wrote a somewhat of a positive paragraph, but the way it was worded made it seem like the children were misbehaving in some kind of way, or making it seem like they were characterized as mischievous in a way. But it didn't even necessarily go down like that. So it's almost how the media portrays black people inaccurately. But it was a wholesome, positive interaction, constructive interaction. But I just don't think the wording was all the way accurate. But I appreciated the picture, though. And the third was there was this white female said that I was going to the dark side. And the reason she said that was I asked her a question, you know, because this white guy, he said, well, what's going to happen whenever I leave here, you know, and I retire, because he's in his 60s. What's going to happen when I leave here and y'all can't have any of my words of wisdom? So, you know, that was so vague. So I didn't get any clarification on that. So he insulted this white person by saying that I guess she was talking about her taking some kind of test, and she's nervous that it might be a bunch of 8 or 9-year-olds in there, and she didn't want to make a mistake. And then the guy says, well, the mistake you made was thinking that you were an adult. So he started, you know, busting out laughing. So I tried to be constructive, and I was like, you know, that's something that's incorrect to say. Is this what you mean by your words of wisdom? And I guess she might have took it as me being sarcastic, because, you know, I asked the question because, you know, I try to make sure, you know, people trying to be constructive. So she mentioned something about, you know, you shouldn't try and go over to the dark side with him. Basically, something based on what another white person said, that's supposed to be going to the dark side. So that was that one. And I had an interesting conversation with, my white coworker, and I pretty much let her talk. So I wouldn't impede, the story she was telling me. She basically was talking about two incidents that she had at her old job, where she worked at a convenience store where people come to pump gas. And the first story she was telling me about how there was a black child that was in the store, and he didn't have his parents with him. So she said the black child asked if he could, I guess, have some cookies or some candy or something, and she helped pick out some candy for him or something. And she just tells me out of nowhere that this black guy in the front of the store called her a racist. So, she just pretty much just started talking to me about it. And what is interesting is that the two black females that worked in there were at lunch. Okay, so this is in the, around the 1 o'clock hour. So she said the guy called her a racist. Now, she never really told me, what was the context. She just kept saying that, they kind of got into it a lot. And the guy called the police on this female. And the black cop or some cops came out there, and they pretty much took her side. She was telling me, these cops come out here, they get free food. Basically saying, oh, they're going to believe this guy over me? No, that's not going to happen. And she was telling me, oh, they sent the black cop out here, and he pretty much said, oh, no, this chick right here is really cool. So, I'm just pretty much just listening to her. And she basically just said that situation just died down. Like, they didn't believe the black guy. But she never really told me why he accused her of being a racist. And she said it was the second time that she kept using the word thug, the term thug. She didn't say whether or not the person was black, but from my assumptions, I think she was, like, it was coded language, because she kept saying that, like, in the second incident, that this black gentleman was, I guess, maybe screaming at an older white person, because the white person, I think, tried to hit the person with his car or ran into him or something, and she pretty much intervened. She said she jumped over the counter, and another person, I'm assuming is a white person, in the store jumped to both of the aides. So she was saying, yeah, this little thug started yelling at this older white person. So it was very crafted language, like how she was saying it. But she never said the person was black, because she says, yeah, they just try to, take up the streets, and, it makes you want to run one of those thugs over. And, and once you do it, they want to call you a racist. So she was pretty much starting to reveal itself. But the phone rang, so I had to go attend to a customer. But, yeah, that just happened today. And another interesting observation, because this is a person who goes out of her way to, buy things for black people's birthdays, and does all kinds of, I guess, good things for them, but still has that mindset and behavior. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Profound, profound. I took notes. She has so many different things that came up on the job this week. The first one, in terms of just trying to encourage correct behavior on the job, I think that's one of the ways that we can practice counter-racism, where you never have to say racism, just encouraging correct behavior. Where you were saying the white guy was trying to make his little snide remarks, like, the mistake you made was thinking you were an adult, and this other type of conduct. It's generally, I'm not saying that nobody jokes on whites on the job, because they certainly do. But in the system of racism, white supremacy, black people are supposed to be the folks catching the brunt of any sort of harassment or mistreatment. So whatever we can do to try to discourage that on the job. I think that we had a black female caller earlier today was talking about how this white woman who is sexually terrorizing her on the job, that unfortunately some black male coworkers, that they had made some comments about her figure before, and the whites kind of picked up on that and continued the harassment. Just that's really one thing that we should really try to enforce, demonstrate in our own behavior constantly. Just we support justice, we support correct behavior, and not talking bad about name calling other black people on the job. also thought the white person that was accused of being a racist, and they sent out black enforcement officials, and they thought, oh, this is a cool, what that, it, I cannot emphasize that enough. That is one of the strongest components of keeping a system of white supremacy going, where you got to have John Brown, Jane Brown, Timothy Wise, Dr. Peggy McIntosh. You got to have some of these individuals that, hey, this is the coolest fella in the world. And such and such is just great, and you know, they participated in about 20 rallies, and we road trip to Ferguson together. I mean, what do you mean this person is racist? Get out of here. Huge component of maintaining white power and making sure that, you know, there have to be at least, even if it's just 10, 15, 20, small number, even that is huge in terms of contaminating our thinking about what it means to be classified as white. The circular that you were talking about, I think that was the very first incident that you mentioned, this newsletter that they sent around. You were in it, and I guess they had some other folks in it as well, this black female that was retiring. If I heard correctly, where they did not include the correct picture, they had a picture of her sister. That's just the epitome of tacky, if I heard that correctly. Where did I hear it correctly?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, that's just the epitome of tacky, in my opinion, where it doesn't matter. One Negro, two Negros, it's all the same. Just get somebody's picture and just put it in there. I mean, I cannot imagine it being that sort of shiftless effort if it was a white person that was retiring and, you know, we want to show them some gratitude for their time and energy and how long they've been an employee, part of the family, because that's the type of language they normally employ, a part of our family leaving, and we can't even have the dignity, take the time to get an accurate photograph to show our appreciation for that. I mean, that right there lets me know all I need to know. Good riddance. I hope I will not bump into any of you all after retirement. I will stop there, although there were a few other things in there I thought were really important as well. But just again, emphasize support justice on the job, no name calling, and hopefully that will rub off onto other people in terms of how we conduct ourselves in a workplace environment. Were there other folks? Was there someone else? Were you going to comment? Did I miss somebody? Anybody that we have not heard from at all have commentary that they wanted to share? Anyone that we have not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. Greeting all the callers and listeners. Long time listener, first time caller. I call myself TC. I work for a large tech company in the Bay Area, and I'm kind of needing some help from you all. I am dealing with a suspected white supremacist female. We've had an issue, if you will, and I'll try to make this as short as possible. I was assigned to assist her in a project that she was working on because she was overburdened. And so that was supposed to be a part of my regular work duties. So, you know, I would assist when necessary, but that was not the entirety of my job duties. So I was pulled from that project to another project, and I guess she thought that I was still supposed to be helping her. But I guess in her mind, she thought that I was just supposed to take over it completely. And this created a climate where she would ask me if I was going to be able to help her today, but because I was working on other more high-priority tasks, I would have to inform her that, you know, hey, I can't today because I have this to do or that to do. Long story short, she became very short with me. I noticed that her attitude towards me and even her, body language became very aggressive. And so one day I just pulled her to the side and said, hey, like, do we have an issue? Because I believe that in a system of racism, white supremacy, you have to take all precautions to defuse certain situations because, oh, here's this other, this angry black man that's not trying to do his job. So I tried to get ahead of it and just say, hey, is there an issue? And then we got into a dialogue, and I'm speaking to her as calmly as I'm speaking to you guys now, and she goes, oh, why are you raising your voice at me? Once again, white female victim role. I said, you know what? Let's do this. Let's pull the manager in. So I pulled the manager in so we could have somebody to mediate, because once again, I'm just trying to think ahead of all the issues that she could probably try to play me on. I said, you know what? Let me have a third party in so she can't try to say that I was trying to be the aggressor in any kind of way for the during the situation. So we got that ironed out, I guess. And then I've been noticing increasingly ever so much, like today and yesterday, she's been really watching my movements. She's been looking at my computer screen because, I'm sorry, we sit right next to each other. So she's been bringing out her notepad and taking notes about my movements. So I guess, Cal's family, what I'm trying to figure out is how should I best attack this, because I definitely want to remain codified, but also, you know, let her know that it's not okay, you know, for her to kind of be watching my movements when I'm there just trying to do my job to the best of my ability and stay under the radar. I'll mute my line.
I would pull out my notepad every time she pulls out her notepad and take notes about her at the same time and see how she likes that. I'm guaranteed she'll stop.
Actually, Thomas, I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's exactly what I've been doing. You know, every time she has her notepad out, I break mine out as well. But, what, you know, the one thing that I'm kind of gauged to as well, Thomas, is just trying to make sure that I don't do anything that will come off as, let's say, me being spiteful or me being mocking, because that's only going to give her more ammunition, and I'm trying to not engage with her as much as possible. You know what I mean?
Could you get relocated?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to try to do that too, retired firefighter. What's going on is actually the manager is, how fortuitous is this on the right? He's out of town on vacation until Tuesday. So, but that's definitely first on the priority list, you know, once he gets back.
As far away as possible.
Agreed. Very much agreed.
Any other suggestions for our male caller who dialed in? Any other suggestions? With just document, and I would assume that you are being watched anyway. I think the male caller that dialed in to give us the update a while back, where he said that he had done some boxing, and apparently the person, one of his coworkers that found out, went and told everybody else once they got upset with him about reporting the sexual harassment. There is so much networking going on anyway that we are not aware about. Networking, watching, making notes and observations about our behavior. There's so much of that going on anyway that you should just assume, even if you don't see the notepad and pen out and active, that that's what's happening anyway, that they're making all sorts of mental notes and remarks and observations about us anyway. That's what the entirety of racism, white supremacy has been. So I would try not to let that unnerve you. That's just reminding you that you are behind enemy lines, and that should be reflected in your behavior. And I agree. Take your own notes, if that means having your recorder present or notepad, whatever that means. But take your own documentation of things that are happening. If you can get distance from her, fine. If not, I would just be very alert to things that are happening in that environment, particularly if you've got a white woman playing the victim role successfully and getting others to believe that you have wronged her somehow.
I actually got a good question for you guys. What I was thinking about doing, you know, just trying to put my intellect to use, is maybe trying to flip the script a little bit and play the black victim, you know, almost as if, you know, really let them know that I'm the one that's being terrorized. and just kind of maybe speaking with my manager and just saying, hey, you know, she's watching me. It makes me feel uncomfortable. I want to come here and just do my job and be happy doing my job and X, Y, Z. I mean, do you guys feel like that will kind of, like, turning the tables, you think that that would be a viable option for kind of combating the type of terrorism?
I would suggest that usually they don't allow black victims. The white people are usually always the victim. They will flip that on you. They'll want you to speak, say something specific that happened so they can pretty much tell you that it's not being racist or whatever. I wouldn't do that. I think, you know, if you could try to move, you should anticipate it, and I would take those. And what's bugging me is that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the Voltron effect, if she didn't go and say something to another white person and that other white person told her to start taking notes. You know, and they got her back completely, you know, like, hey, I'm going to tell you how to get rid of that nigga. Start taking notes, you know, just how they function in the workplace. They're all together.
I agree. I don't think – I was just going to say quickly, I don't – they do not allow black victimhood. I think exactly as Thomas said, they would probably immediately go to, wait a minute, where is your proof? What are you talking about? You're a victim. Who did something to you? When were you mistreated? They're going to want exact proof, exact evidence, and then if you provide it, they're probably going to say that's not victimhood and nobody mistreated you because you're black. That would be what I expect to happen, and an even stronger – marshaling of white forces to mistreat you or cause just more problems for you. I could just see a lot of ways where that could backfire. Was someone else going to comment?
Yes. Is there anyone else around that sees her, like preferably a non-white person? Is there anybody else that is around that sees her taking these notes and basically is being subliminally hostile towards you?
No, because like I said, in the company that I work for, like I said, it's a tech company, so I mean, we pretty much work on our individual tasks, so there's not a lot of like collaboration where people would be able to look up and around. Most of us are, you know, just looking at our computer screen doing our jobs, and I also make a point, you know, actually, this is how I catch up on the archives, have my headphones on, you know, listening to something other so I don't have to focus on her or anything else other than just doing my job, which kind of seems weird to me because that's what I'm doing, my job. But if I get up to use the bathroom or if I talk to somebody or if I pick up my phone to change the track on the podcast that I'm listening to, like I just noticed her picking up, you know, her notepad and writing.
I think that could be tough, too, because they might take the position, well, you know, you don't know what she's writing, and you don't know if she's writing about you, per se. You're just being paranoid. Have you asked? I could see them taking that position as well.
Have you had a chance to look at the notepad as she maybe walked away from her desk and maybe at least turned it around or something like that to know that maybe she's writing, okay, well, 8:05, he's messing with the phone, 8:10, he's doing whatever?
No, I can't. It's like, it's not like a legal pad. It's kind of like one with a cover. And like I said, the last thing I need to do, you know, is black man going on a white person's desk, you know, if I get, you know, that would do more harm than good. I'm sure you all would agree as well.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I think with some of what Thomas shared and some of the other folks in terms of, at least right now, I wouldn't go the black victim route. I would be alert. I would have my own notes about things that are happening in the workplace and just be alert to see where they go next, whatever her next plan of attack against you is. But I wouldn't go the black victim route. I would see if you are able to get moved to a different location that might ease some of the conflict. But just be alert. Know that, you know, she probably is going to be trying to make some problems for you. But I, Yeah, I wouldn't. I would agree. I don't think snooping around on her desk, but I also wouldn't even go with the go to make some sort of accusation about her taking notes about you just because you could be wrong about that. She could lie, and it seems like you probably don't have proof of what she's actually doing when she's, you know, writing on this pad or what have you. So I probably wouldn't recommend that either.
Yeah, because if you play victim, she's going to trump you because she's going to go in there and play super victim. That's what white people play. The super, like, superheroes is super victims. And once one tier, it's a wrap, you know? So I would just stay away from that office right now. Unless she calls you a nigger and you can prove it, like, you know, something like that. That's the only way you can prove that she's doing anything inappropriate. I think Mr. Fuller said it's impossible to prove a white person's practice of racism. Text message, something like that, get in her Facebook or something, get in her timeline and pull up something she texted or tweeted and send that to HR. That's your only option.
No, that's definitely very constructive, Thomas. Thank you. I appreciate you guys so much for the platform, and I'll be sure to call back in with any further development. I'll mute my line.
Give us the updates, different callers. Definitely appreciate it if you have a situation. Because like I said, you know, we're all still learning, so you might say, hey, whatever. They didn't know what they were talking about. I got my own plans for how I'm going to successfully resolve this. Let us know. That way we can get better. We can see how these things evolve, not just from, you know, we're gawking at whatever your situation is, but from all of us just trying to learn and refine our strategies for what to do with regards to workplace racism. Anybody have other observations, other comments? Last few minutes as we wind down in the broadcast. Anything else folks wanted to make sure they get in?
I wanted to say that guy who called back in and chimed in and filled us in on his situation where the white woman was coming on to him in the elevator and made some comments, and he did exactly I think what was the advice on the show, and how the white men formed like Voltron against him. And man, you know, I think Mr. Wise called it pseudoscientific BS, but that's not even like, I mean, that is the theory, you know, genetic annihilation. Has to be a white woman he's talking about. You got to get ready. We gotta put him in line real quick, just how they formed. Even in the one Roz gave, there was a coworker who, a white female, he rejected her, and all of a sudden, now her and other white people are trying to get rid of him. That's all genetic annihilation fear. That's all that, you know, which I think is the only thing white people fear is genetic annihilation, which is why they go so hard to prevent it. And that was the preemptive strikes, you know, pretty much saying, you know, I'm going to kick you because this white woman wants you and can produce an Obama with you. You know, it's like that's what they're thinking, you know, and it's just that was a great because I think a firefighter, when he gave that scenario, he said, you know, the other white men will look and see, like, you know, she likes him, you know, and they would form then, you know. So either way, you're screwed in that moment. That's a very, I'm glad he called back in. Very good.
Other folks have comments they want to make sure they get in. I bit my lip for the program, so I've been trying to keep some ice in my mouth by sounding a bit odd, or if you can hear the ice. Folks have other comments, observations they wanted to make sure they got in. Everybody satisfied? Make sure we're not missing anybody flying in under the last few minutes. Again, Allison Manswell, she'll be on the program next Wednesday. It'll almost be like we have back-to-back episodes of Workplace Racism next week. Any of the situations that we have been dealing with and talking about, if you want to dial in next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. She is a black female, to kind of see what her thoughts are. She's given talks, lectures, written a whole book about workplace racism. So that should be hopefully very constructive to kind of get some of her views. She seems to be really sincere in her efforts to try to give out some constructive strategies. So that's next Wednesday. We'll have back-to-back days of workplace racism. Other folks have any comments they want to make sure they get in?
Hey, Gus, did you see the doctor today on the airplane trying to help a white person and being told she's not a doctor?
Wow. I did not see that.
Yeah. I sent it to you. Absolutely. I mean, young female pretty doctor. I mean, and no, sit down, ma'am. I don't want to hear what you have to say. Oh, I'm a doctor. I'm a physician. What kind of doctor are you? I mean, questioning her while the guy's sitting there dying. And then a white guy jumps up and says, he's a doctor. And, okay, you can sit down now. He's a real doctor. I mean, unbelievable.
That is the system of white supremacy. I might even invoke Dr. Eddie Moore Jr., founder of the White Privilege Conference, his concept of the theory of incapability, where he says that whites, they are not capable of seeing black people as scholars, scientists, doctors, lawyers, attorneys, intelligent human beings, that we've just got to be, you know, thieves, drug addicts, crack babies. That's pretty much all we can be as niggers. But yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm looking at the report from his email now. Folks want to check it out. Racist flight crew almost let a man die as they didn't believe a black woman was a doctor. Degrees don't mean anything. Folks have other comments.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to ask a specific question about a specific type of like white supremacists I feel I encounter working like at sales jobs. There's always like these dudes, like super Republican, super gun nuts, really into like just right wing everything. But they all, I notice all of them listen to rap music and they try to hang around black people. Like, does that happen in any other type of job? Because I noticed selling cars, like almost every white person that worked there was like exactly the same. Like, no, they all were like into sports. Like just really like listen to like all types of rap music, like what, but they all were like extra right wing Republican. And I want to know if that was normal in any other type of field.
I think that's go ahead, ma'am.
I'm sorry. I was actually listening to Black Talk Radio earlier with Brother Kwabena, and he was actually talking about how detrimental, like, rap music is. So it kind of makes sense for a white supremacist or a suspected white supremacist to listen to rap, because if all rap is saying how much we are niggers and bees and hoes and stuff like that, if it's so self-hating, then it almost kind of makes sense for them to like that, because it just reconfirms in their mind all the bad things that they already think about us.
I completely agree with her. There is music that is called rap, made by black people, that is trying to be constructive, and even talking about racism, that just doesn't get the same type of promotion, generally speaking. But I would say even all the way back, if folks remember when we did the book study on The Half Has Never Been Told, where they had the passage where white enslavers, they would come and hang out in the slave quarters, of course, to rape black people, but also to listen to them playing music. That has been a long-running pattern for staunch racists. I mean, you cannot get any more racist, forget right wing, than, you know, give me a whip so I can go out and, you know, lash 100 black people and have them on my cornfield. That's just the long-running part of racism, that you can demonize and terrorize and rape and plunder a group of people, but you still have no problem going to enjoy them, sing a few carols or tunes or what have you. That's, you know, throughout the history of white supremacy, that is no conflict of interest. Even any form of entertainment, really, if it's going to be music, whatever era, if it's jazz, the same white people that wouldn't rent black people a house or wouldn't give them a job and sit around and tell nigger jokes about them all day long, we'll run into Harlem once the sun goes down so we can go to the Cotton Club and what have you and hear a few niggers sing some songs. That's just the long-running aspect of white supremacy, just how they behave. We can go and listen to our rap music all day in our car, and then we come in and mistreat the black people at work.
And if I could add to that, if you go back in Cal's archives and check out the episode with MC Search, the 90s Macklemore, talking about, white guys are bad people, and you got it. And came on to Cal's, and he had a deal with Nas. He's still not giving him back his publishing, even though he was supposed to. He could afford to buy it back from him, but he said, hey, I'm not going to take away my paycheck that comes every year from owning half of his royalties or however much he owns. So he's, he's a big time racist, and he makes rap music, and people would assume that he's not a racist. I would imagine most people would assume he's not a racist, and he's a big time racist. And he switched from being white to being just a Jew halfway through the show as well.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, because a lot of these dudes will be caught, like, around regular, so-called, like, I guess regular white people, they'd be classified as wiggers. So that's why it was, like, I understand that white people listen to rap music and are still racist, but it was just, it seemed like it's just, like, 90%. Like, they all talk, like, super fast, like almost in a rhymey way, and they'd be like, hey, yo, like, they literally, like, these dudes are, like, man, it's hard to explain. It's not hard to explain. They are what you somebody would classify as a wigger, and they still are extra. I mean, I guess I've seen that before, but it seemed like it's just really common in where I was working at. Like literally every white person was like that. Like no, like every single one.
Absolutely. I just wanted to say real quick, I think Dr. Welsing would also want us to make sure to include the envy factor. And I think it reminded me even the black female who was talking about being sexually terrorized on the job, where she felt there was an element, if I'm remembering correctly, she felt there was an element of envy that this white woman had for her figure. And that was a part of the sexual attacks. I think that's a big aspect of it, too. I think whites, they have such an affinity, might even relate to Roz's consumption of black people, the envy of not having pigmentation, not having melanin. They consume us in a variety of ways. And then the angst about that is taken out in various forms of actually practicing racism against live human beings. But the consumption of black people out of envy and racism, that is a very common aspect that takes a lot of forms. I think listening to various types of black music is just one of those forms. Raj, you were going to add on?
Yes, you took the entire paragraph right out of my mouth. I was about to say it's a form of consumption. It kind of brings me to basically white is the new black. Only white people can act black and get away with their lives doing so. And then, like you said, they'll transform back into their white world being white supremacists, but they have the ability to, act black. It kind of reminds me of Neely Fuller in recent months. He was talking about the fact that the white male's rectum is the new black vagina, and to me, it's like they're just that's the new version of what black people are supposed to be. White people acting black who can go back to being white when they want to, and when you brought up the whole idea of consumption, that's exactly what was on my mind. They're consuming us, and then they go back to being their racist selves. It reminds me of the Delectable Negro, where they talked about that there was one slave owner who used to get such sexual arousal and just even appetite stimulation from abusing black people that he would actually take to beating blacks before he would eat. So in other words, there's times that he went to bed without dinner because just abusing black people was the way that he got his gratification, even beyond eating actual food. So thank you very much for bringing that up. I'll mute my line.
Last few minutes, folks have anything else they want to make sure they get in? Folks all satisfied? Nothing else they want to make sure you bring up?
And I just wanted to add as well, another white person who, you know, just to hammer it home, that makes rap music, look at Eminem. He, when the Source put out the song when he did when he was a youth, calling a black person a nigger, because the black guy took his black girlfriend from him, away from him, and he made a song dissing the black guy who took the black girlfriend he had and called him a nigger in the song, they went on to shut the Source down, took it away from Benzino. He lost the Source. I think some white people came and snatched it up at a real low price, and it might even still operate, but it never had its luster that it once had, and that was done by Eminem. And here's this black man, I think four black people owned the Source, out of a job, in debt, all because of, you know, his power as a white man.
Not privilege, power. We will be here tomorrow for The Spook Who Sat by the Door, Sam Greenlee. This is the second to last session, almost done. Workplace racism still comes up quite a bit, home stretch of Mr. Greenlee's book. Normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific tomorrow. Anything else folks need to get in, workplace racism related, or are we all set for today's broadcast? Everyone satisfied? I will assume everyone is good. Thanks, everyone, for participating. I will again say you can email, and I will, you know, read your responses. You can, if you want to do it anonymous. If you have something you would like to ask Ms. Manswell, Allison Manswell, for next Wednesday, if you have a question you would like to ask her, you can email. Just get it to me before showtime next Wednesday, and I'll ask her on the program. It will be like we have 2 days of workplace racism, which is probably apropos. Because so many problems pop up on the job for us. Again, we'll be here tomorrow. We'll be here on Saturday. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll be here every day all the way through, I think, October 23rd. So just stay tuned. If you have problems, questions, guest suggestions, gripes, complaints, drop us an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Listener-supported counter-racist radio. The blog address is racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener-supported counter-racist radio. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you're not in the PayPal, drop us an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. With that, thanks to everyone tuning in. I hope it has been a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. I be best under conditions of white supremacy. You never know when today will be the day that you bump into Darren Wilson, Daniel Holzclaw, any other race soldier, badge or no, any face-to-face confrontation. Under these conditions, it could be a life-ending, life-altering incident in a matter of seconds. I do not think us being intoxicated is going to help us safely navigate these type situations. Racism is war being waged against black people at all times, worldwide, in all areas of people activity. Our conduct should reflect that at all times. If you are going to be in a vehicle, driver, passenger, even if you're going to be a pedestrian, you do not want to be intoxicated and get pulled over and have to try to explain yourself under those conditions. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.